The Innocent, Chapter 1. Father and son sat in the car and waited. They didn't know what they were waiting for. The nerve? The strength to do what they now had to do? They didn't know how long it would take to find that strength of will. So they waited. The weather was mild in this part of the country, even though summer had already hit some of the states they'd been in recently with a vengeance. Despite the mildness of the day, the car's interior was still oppressive and uncomfortable. John looked at the building they were parked in front of. Not overly fancy, but it had a good reputation, and there had been other features that had made this place a good choice. It hadn't been easy, none of it, but he had been certain that it had been for the best. John's mind was on his last conversation with Missouri. Conversation hell. They had shouted, argued. She had made him feel worthless as a father, a failure. He was uncertain if that had been her intention, but she hadn't pulled any punches. The worst was that, in his bleakest moments, when he really thought about it, he knew she was right. "How long?" She had spoken the words as if she couldn't quite believe them. Last Christmas. It had been almost a whisper at that point, an admission of his guilt. "John Winchester, how could you do that to your boy? You know what family has always meant to him, and you haven't seen him in almost 6 months? Not even for his birthday?" "Zuri, I don't want to hear it. I didn't challenge your decision to leave him where you left him. I had no right. You're the parent. Although I have to say that you could hardly have chosen a more out-of-the-way place. Obviously no chance of just passing by or being in the neighborhood. But not to even make the effort? Since Christmas?" The silence between them had been thick, uncomfortable, and overpowering. Sam had been there, but had said nothing. John could guess whose side he was on. Her voice softened as she sighed. She almost looked defeated, almost. It took a lot to defeat a woman like Missouri Mosley, and John didn't think he had what it took. She looked up at him, and he was sure she was looking straight into his soul. "Tell me, John. If I told you that he was in danger, that he needed your help, would you make the effort to go and see him then?" That had been 4 days ago, and now here he was, sitting outside the care home that had been his eldest son's home for the better part of 4 years. The care home that received money off him every month without fail. Sam knew better than to question where the money came from. But never a letter or a note or a call for Dean. No contact since last Christmas, and that visit, he had to admit, had been the first in almost as many months. 4 years, and since Dean had been here, John had visited him exactly 9 times. Every time had been the same. Dean had been glad to see him. Dean had made a fuss when he tried to leave, been inconsolable. John's heart had broken a little more every time he'd said goodbye, every time Dean begged him not to leave him here again, alone. He'd spoken to the doctors, to Dean's doctor, Weinberg, and Dean was making steady progress. John didn't doubt the doctor's assessment. It was always true that whenever John did pay a visit, Dean had been walking better or talking better. Dean was being rehabilitated, and the doctor seemed proud of his achievements. Dean, according to Weinberg, should be able to function independently in the real world. But he didn't understand. Dean didn't live in the real world. Hadn't since he lost his mother. The world Dean lived in would never forgive any frailty or weakness. The world Dean lived in, he could never be rehabilitated enough to survive in, and so John had left him, here, where it was safe. But where he had to accept that his family would be strangers to him. Dean wasn't rehabilitated enough to understand that either. Sam had seen his brother a few more times than his father. In the beginning, he traveled up here often, but not for the last couple of years. For the last couple of years, he'd only made the trip when his father had. Sam's reluctance to see his brother had a lot to do with guilt, too, but not the guilt of a parent for failing to protect a child. His guilt was much more basic than that. He knew that he was completely responsible for what had happened to Dean. It had been his fault entirely. He had no doubt. If he hadn't been so distracted, so keyed up about trying to find a way to tell them he was leaving, so excited about the letter from Stanford, Dean wouldn't have had to save him. Dean got hurt trying to save him. That was the mantra he repeated all the time Dean had been in surgery, all the time he had been in the ICU, all the time he had been in a coma, and after, when Dean had woken up and hadn't been Dean anymore. Dean got hurt trying to save him. Sam didn't think Dean had actually succeeded in saving him. Not really. He hadn't left this life that he'd been desperate to escape. How could he have considered it after what had happened? He'd stayed with Dad. He'd been responsible for John Winchester losing one son. He would not be responsible for him losing another. He'd lived his life as if he was living it for Dean. Living Dean's life because Dean couldn't live it. Stanford was only a half-remembered dream now. What Sam wanted then, well, he didn't want any more. What he wanted now was to turn the clock back to when he was 17, to when he had seen the applications for college. He wanted to turn the clock back and not pick them up, not even consider it. Not think about a life away from his brother or his father. He'd been selfish, and Dean got hurt trying to save him. So they sat outside the hospital in the car that Dean used to love and waited. Waited to find the courage to see the son that had been failed and abandoned. Waited to find the courage to see the brother that was a pale imitation of the man he'd once been. The carer, the joker, the hunter. "Come on, Sam. We better go in and see him." The Innocent, Chapter 2. "Hello, can I help you?" The woman, John supposed she was a nurse of some sort, even though she wasn't in uniform, spoke with a cheery smile that did nothing to brighten John's mood. He should know who the people were who were looking after Dean. He shouldn't need to introduce himself. John tried to return her smile. "I'm John Winchester. This is my son, Sam. We've come to see Dean." The woman hid her reaction well, but it had been noted. A little surprise at receiving visitors for someone who hadn't had visitors in so long, coupled with a little hostility at meeting the family of someone who had been more or less abandoned by them. She hid her reaction well, but yes, it had been noted. "I'm Kathleen Douglas. Pleased to meet you." She offered her hand to John and Sam in turn. "I've only known Dean for a few months, but he is a real darling." She seemed to be waiting for some response from the men, but got none. "If you'd follow me, please, I'll take you to see him." Kathleen led them along a very short hallway, and then up a dark wood-paneled staircase. It was an old building, but even though the stairs creaked, everything was in good state of repair. It had originally been a small family-run hotel before it was set up as a residential care home. Apart from the obvious necessities of a place of residence, it also had a swimming pool and gymnasium for physical therapy sessions, and there were several rooms set up for various other therapies. There were two doctors that worked here, one full-time, the other part-time, and several specialists that were called in or visited regularly, depending on the requirements of the residents. This had been the best place that they could find for Dean. It wasn't a place that specialized in the type of condition that Dean had. It was mainly used by the elderly, but John hadn't just been looking for somewhere with a good reputation in healthcare circles. It had been a factor of, but he had other criterias that had to be met before he considered leaving one of his kids here. Jim Murphy had eventually come up with this place, after doing a lot of fooling around. It wasn't a cheap place to have someone live in full-time. It was often used for respite care, for those who were usually taken care of at home by family members, but whose relatives required a bit of a break. The home catered between 60 and 70 people. Some had their own rooms, like Dean, others shared. Less than half of them lived here full-time. Dean Winchester was one of them, one that didn't spend the holidays with loved ones, who didn't go away in the summer on family vacations. The Winchesters may not have been that kind of family, but, financially at least, he had had their support. John didn't kid himself that financial support made him any better as a parent. He hadn't needed Missouri to point out his shortcomings in that area. He didn't need Kathleen Douglas to do it either. They stopped outside one of the rooms that overlooked the landscaped driveway. Kathleen paused. If you wouldn't mind waiting here, I'll let him know he has visitors. He doesn't always react too well to surprises. She didn't wait for them to agree to her suggestion, just automatically assumed that they would. They watched in silence as she walked towards the young man at the far side of the room. Dean. He had changed since the last time they'd seen him. His hair was a little long for him, almost to his shoulders, and he'd lost some weight. He looked thin, but more toned. He was completely clean-shaven. He looked about 18. He didn't seem to notice the older woman as she approached him, so unaware, so unlike the Dean of old. He was defenseless here. The thought had John watching for signs of the danger that Missouri had said was after his firstborn. Dean's attention was fixated on whatever was outside the room, and Kathleen had had to place her hand gently on his shoulder to attract his attention. He had startled only slightly, and then had smiled as he recognized his carer. John couldn't hear the words that Kathleen spoke to his son, but he saw the reaction to them. Dean's face broke into a radiant smile. Not waiting for Kathleen to say that it was all right for him to enter, John took a breath and stepped into the room. "Hello, son." Dean's reaction was one of pure joy, and he moved quickly, at least as quickly as he could, until he was close enough to embrace his father. John held back only slightly before relaxing into the hug. He brought one hand up to his son's head and felt it. Under the unruly mop of the hair, the dent, the hidden legacy of that night 4 years ago, that had robbed Dean of himself. "Missed you," Dean breathed into his neck. "Missed you too, son." "Still miss you, Dean," his internal voice added. Dean pulled back. "Sammy?" Sam stepped into the room slowly. "I'm here." Oblivious of his little brother's discomfort, Dean repeated the welcome he had given his father. "Car, outside." John smiled, so that's what had attracted Dean's attention. Dean's speech had improved, at least as much as the 5 words he had spoken were able to convey. The aphasia, which had meant that he'd been completely mute when he had woken from the coma, was incurable. He knew that, but it was great to hear Dean's voice. It wasn't the same strong sound that it was before. It was hesitant, like it took a lot of concentration to make each syllable. But it was wonderful as far as John was concerned. As Dean led his younger brother deeper into the room to show him the car through the window, Kathleen approached John. Despite himself and the fact that the slim redhead was almost 6 inches shorter than him, he felt slightly intimidated by her accusing look. "Dean seems really happy to see you. He's usually reluctant to say anything. I guess he's missed having you visit. No one's been to see him for as long as I've been here." John knew a challenge to explain himself when he heard one, but he refused to bite. He was not going to apologize to this woman for his treatment of his son. Watching Dean move, he turned to Kathleen. "He's walking better than he was." "He is, isn't he? I've never seen anyone work so hard to get better than Dean." John started to warm to this woman, as she spoke about his son with obvious affection. "The therapists here tell him to do something, and he does it as if it's an order. He goes to the gym every day. He swims. He works on his speech. It's as if he wants to prove something to someone." A pause. "Any idea who that might be, Mr. Winchester?" Warm to her? John suddenly wanted to hit this woman. To shut her up. To. He took a breath. "Where are Dean's things? We're taking him away." "What?" Kathleen almost shouted and then composed herself. This man was unreal. He actually thought he could walk in and take Dean just like that. "Have you spoken to Dr. Weinberg or Dr. Sullivan?" "Sullivan?" "Dr. Sullivan is this facility's administrator. You surely aren't planning on taking Dean away from here tonight, are you?" John had had enough of this woman. What the hell gave her the right to question him where his family was concerned? "Of course not," he lied. "I have an appointment to see Dr. Weinberg tomorrow morning. I intend to take Dean with me after that." Kathleen relaxed slightly. She knew Jack Weinberg had a soft spot for Dean. Hell, nearly everyone here had a soft spot for him. It might have been something to do with his mere presence lowered the average age of the residents by about 20 years. When Jack looked at Dean, he saw a remarkably brave and determined young man. A young man with a kind heart and a totally unselfish nature. Jack took pride in Dean's accomplishments. Each improvement in his muscles, tone, and strength. Each time he overcame an obstacle that was thrown in his path. Dean had nightmares. No, not nightmares. full-blown night terrors, though he either didn't remember what they were about or, as Jack suspected, simply didn't want to share the details. He'd always had them, apparently, for as long as he'd been living here anyway, but they had been getting progressively worse lately, more frequent. Jack had spent more than one night sitting in Dean's room, keeping lookout for whatever had Dean panic-stricken when he woke. She wasn't sure how Jack would react to the assumption of one John Winchester that he could just walk in and take Dean without so much as a by your leave. As much as she hated to admit it, the boy hadn't looked this alive, this happy, in all the time that she'd known him. Besides, she knew what Sullivan would say. John Winchester pays for his son to be here. He calls the shots. Maybe when Jack saw him in the morning, he'd talk some sense into the man. I'll leave you to your visit, Mr. Winchester. With that, John watched as the bitch, he could think of her as nothing else, marched away. John joined his sons on the far side of the room. Dean and Sam were perched on the bed in an excited but one-sided conversation.
What are you two talking about?
A redundant question, really, because John could guess. Dean gazed at him, and John was struck by the innocence that flowed out of him. Trip? John smiled. You want to come on a trip with us, then, Dean? Dean nodded enthusiastically. He spoke as an afterthought. Where? I thought we'd start off by going to see Missouri, and then we'll decide from there. Both John and Sam noticed Dean's smile falter. They looked at each other and then turned their attention back to Dean.
Don't you want to see Missouri? She wants to see you. She's missed you.
Sam glared at his father. He knew what John was doing. Dean would never say no if he was made to feel guilty enough over it. Dean looked questioningly at his father and forced the words out that he wanted to say.
She does?
Sure she does. She's always asking about you. Was talking about you just the other day. She'd be awful upset if we were passing and didn't call in.
Okay.
Dean's voice was small, almost childlike, but so were a lot of things about Dean these days.
So where's your stuff, kiddo?
Sam watched his brother sleep in the back seat of the car. He must have been tired because it had taken less than 20 minutes for the hum of the engine to lure him into unconsciousness. It had taken all of their willpower to prevent Dean from visiting everyone in Fieldcrest to say goodbye. After a lot of no, Dean, he had finally given in, albeit reluctantly, and had actually appeared to sulk right up until he saw the car. The look on his face when he saw the Impala was something Sam had been glad to witness. He had run his hand across the paintwork, reverently, looking over the bodywork as if checking for scratches and dents. Some things about the old Dean were still there. He turned his attention from one of the most important people in his life to look at the other.
So what now, Dad? Missouri, and then what?
She thinks she'll be able to pick up more about whatever is after Dean when he's with her. We can make plans when we know more. John saw him tell up the head. We need to get your brother a bed for the night.
Don't you think we should just carry on driving if getting back to Missouri is so important?
It is important, Sam, but I don't want to make things harder on your brother than they need to be. He's been kind of sheltered for the last few years. He isn't used to this.
Sam checked on Dean again as he moved in his sleep.
Are you sure Missouri is right, Dad? I mean, Dean has been at Fieldcrest for years. No saw on the windowsills or across the doorways. No protection from what we know is out there at all, and nothing has happened to him.
John pulled into the motel parking lot once he assured himself that there were vacancies. Thought had occurred to me, Sam, but maybe they figured he wasn't a threat to them.
Come off it, Dad. Some of the shit that he got involved in before. Something he could easily have wanted revenge or gone after him to get us.
John slumped in his seat, sighed, and looked at his youngest son. He wasn't really in the mood for a conversation with Sam that could lead to yet another row. He was tired, they all were, but Sam could be a stubborn bastard, got it from his father.
Okay. Look, nothing's foolproof. Couldn't be certain about it, but that whole goddamn area is like a supernatural dead zone. Pastor Jim said that no one had reported a haunting or sighting of anything else in that area in more than 80 years. Now, I know it wasn't a guarantee, but it's the main reason I chose Fieldcrest for him. Maybe if something had been after him, maybe it couldn't get to him there.
A A simmering anger welled up within Sam. That was information he had had a right to know. He'd have felt a little better about Dean being sequestered in that place if he had that little bit of information. He shouldn't be surprised, though. Dad was always good at keeping secrets. The only person he had ever shared them with had been his wife. Not even Dean had been privy to most of his dad's thoughts and actions. Thoughts of Dean made him suppress what he wanted to say. This wasn't the time or place for yet another row with the old man. They'd been doing too much of that over the last few years. Then why the hell are we taking him away from there if it's so safe? Because, like I said, there's no guarantees. Missouri said that something's after him. Maybe if something's determined enough, it could get to him. I just think he's safer right now if he's with us. John turned the engine off. He'll book us in. Just the one room, though, Sam. Okay? Sure. He wasn't sure exactly how much looking after Dean would need. If there was danger coming, there was strength in numbers. You get the room. I'll wake him up. The Innocent, Chapter 3. By the time John got back to the car, Dean had his head balanced on Sam's shoulder, and Sam had his arms around Dean's waist. John stayed silent. He indicated the room that was theirs and handed Sam the card key. He grabbed their bags from the car and slammed the trunk closed. This was not going to be easy. He followed them into the room. "Are you hungry, Dean?" Dean looked up at his dad from where he was sitting on the bed. John could see the drying tear tracks on his face. He didn't answer, just nodded. "Okay, I'll go and get us all something." "Dad, I'll go." Sam was fishing the bag of salt out of his dad's bag. He placed it on the table. "Sam?" Sam looked to the door and John followed him out. Sam kept the door open and made sure that Dean could see them even if he couldn't hear what was being said. "I'll go, Dad. Dean freaked out when he woke up and you weren't there. He thought you'd left." "Sam, look, I'll be 10, 15 minutes top. Just let him know that you're there, okay?" John wasn't sure he liked Sam telling him what to do, but he was at a loss in this situation. He decided to go along with whatever his youngest child suggested. "See you in a while, then. Get some coffee." John closed the door behind him as he re-entered the room. Dean was staring at his right hand, working at bringing each finger to meet the pad of his thumb, with varying degrees of success. "Hey, dude. Sorry that I wasn't there when you woke up. I was only gone a couple of minutes." Dean bit his bottom lip. John knew why Dean would think he'd left. That's all he'd done for nearly 4 years. Hell, not just the last 4 years. It's what he'd been doing for most of the boy's life. "Dean, I promise that I will tell you where I'm going before I go anywhere, okay?" Dean raised his eyebrows in an obvious question. "I won't go anywhere without telling you, I promise." Dean sighed, accepting his father's words immediately. Dean stood up and walked slowly towards the bathroom. "Shower." "Okay, do you need any help?" John almost laughed at the exasperated look Dean threw at him. "Okay, I guess you don't. Sam should be back with something to eat soon, so don't be too long." "Okay." John watched his son go into the bathroom and then walked over to his bag. He pulled out the file that he had liberated from Weinberg's office. Maybe he should have spoken to the doctor before taking Dean, but as he had made that decision not to, this file should tell him all about his son's strengths and weaknesses, as well as when he needed the medication that Sam had taken from the pharmacy that had Dean's name on. He listened as the shower was turned on and then opened the file. He closed it 10 minutes later when Sam walked in through the door. A lot of it he knew from when Dean had been injured. Brain injury to the prefrontal lobe had affected motor control, speech, and his ability to interact socially on certain levels. There were progress reports and psychiatric evaluations. He could already tell that Dean was moving much more easily, a limp, but no need for a stick like there had been before. There were a few issues with his coordination and, according to the file, a weakened grip on his right side. Weakened? John had noticed that Dean occasionally cradled his right hand with his left and wondered exactly how much control he had over it. He sometimes lost track of time, thinking minutes had passed when, in fact, hours had. Some of this was attributed to petite mal seizures that were occasionally replaced by grand variety. Apparently, he had blinding headaches and night terrors. According to the psychiatric report, Dean was emotionally open, childlike, and very honest. Unless questioned about his nightmares, then he'd be adamant that he didn't remember them. The doctor, it seemed, believed otherwise. There were incidents of depression, and there were times when he was afraid to be alone, when he insisted that the light be left on at night. John sighed, running his hand through his hair. Dean had definitely experienced enough in his life to warrant a few nightmares and a healthy fear of being in the dark alone. Dean was only on one type of medication, levetiracetam, anticonvulsants which he was taking to control his seizures. It didn't stop them, just reduced their frequency. John noted that the other one, the antidepressants, were no longer being given to him. I bet that makes an interesting read. Sam indicated the folder with the pizza boxes before depositing them on the old formica table in the kitchen area. He handed his father a styrofoam cup, which John took gratefully.
You could say that.
Take a look at it another time, all right, when Dean's not around.
Really, Dad, I was hardly going to catalogs what's wrong with him sitting in front of me. Where is he, by the way?
Shower. From the amount of time he's been in there, I doubt there's much in the way of hot water left.
Sam grinned.
Well, that's about right. I always did have to put up with a cold shower if Dean got in there first.
John put the file back into his bag and then walked over to the bathroom door. He knocked gently.
Dean, Sam's back with pizza.
There was no response other than the continuing sound of running water. Knocking more forcefully, he called, "Come on, Dean, aren't you hungry?" After a amount of time, he looked up at Sam and then opened the door.
Dean?
He couldn't see his son from the door, so he walked into the small windowless room. Dean was crouched under the spray.
Dean?
John turned off the water and grabbed a large, threadbare towel.
Dean looked up.
Hmm?
What are you doing down there, son? Come on.
As Dean stood, John wrapped him in the towel and assisted him as he stepped over the side of the bath. There was no way he was risking his son slipping and hurting himself. To John's relief, Dean didn't seem hurt, just a little disoriented. It occurred to him that maybe Dean had had an absence, a petite mal seizure. If that was the case, then he would have to be more careful. He couldn't risk leaving Dean unattended in any situations that may be dangerous if his epilepsy had struck. The petite mal seizures could be dangerous enough, but the grand mal ones, John didn't want to consider. Dean didn't want any help dressing, and John was grateful that he didn't need it. When he tasted the first bite of the pizza, Dean grinned.
Guess greasy takeouts wasn't on the menu very often at Fieldcrest, was it?
Dean grinned around his slice of pepperoni and shook his head.
We'll grab some sleep and then be on the road early. Lawrence is still a few days' drive.
Sam nodded and Dean was too fixated on his pizza to comment.
John found sleep hard to come by. He read Dean's file cover to cover and knew that unless he was willing to make some very big lifestyle changes, he would still have to find somewhere for Dean to live after all this was over. He knew when he left Fieldcrest that Dean would not be going back there. Maybe that was a selfish decision on his part, but Dean didn't need that kind of care anymore. If Dean was as self-motivated to improve his condition as been stated, he could do that anywhere. He'd watched his sons together tonight. He couldn't pretend that it had been like it had been, but it had still been good. So what if there had been no talking of Dean hunting or Dean's latest conquest? Sam and Dean had both laughed. It had been a long time since he heard either of them do that. Dean had crashed early, TV not really interesting him for the longer than 10 minutes. Sam had sat and read the file, silently. John knew that Sam felt responsible for what had happened to Dean. Shit, that was partly his fault. He lashed out when he thought he was going to lose Dean, when he thought Dean was going to die. And then he found the college acceptance letter, the one that Sam didn't post. Sam had had a place at college. Sam had been planning to leave. Sam didn't go. At the time, all he could focus on was Dean. Later, when he thought about it, he realized that Dean would have never blamed Sam. Maybe he should have brought up the college thing with Sam, let him know. But he didn't. He looked over at the two beds, Dean lying under the covers on one, and Sam sprawled across the other. Looks like he'd be getting the wonderfully relaxing flea-bitten couch. He pulled himself to his feet and walked over to the bathroom. He'd given enough time. There should be some hot water available now. A quick shower, and then he stretched out. Well, given the size of the couch, maybe not stretch. John wiped the condensation off the mirror and caught the sight of his reflection. When had he started looking so old? He decided it was the beard. Yep. That definitely made him look older. I mean, all right, so he had two full-grown sons. That didn't mean he was an old man. He looked down at his chest, crossed his arms. The scars were a testament to his life, to his experiences. Some had been from before he'd been hunting. Mary had kissed each and every one of them, the recent ones, the ones since Mary. No one had ever kissed them, acknowledged them. Thinking about Mary made him ask himself what she'd have done in this situation. Mary would have kept Dean with her. It would have been that simple. She was his mother. He braced himself against the sink and really looked at the man in front of him. John Winchester. Man, hunter, father. Which was he most successful at? He didn't need to ask which one of those three roles he was lacking in. He already knew. There were a lot of white in that beard. It was something he could deal with easily enough. He walked back into the room, wearing only his jeans, and dug around the end pocket of his bag. There was a shaving kit in there somewhere. You never know when a razor blade will come in handy. Eureka! It was while he was on his way back to the bathroom that he realized that one of the beds was empty. Sam was unconscious, but Dean was... Where was Dean? John didn't panic. Refused to. If Dean had been scared, he would have made enough fuss for Sam to wake up. That hadn't happened. That still didn't alter the fact that Dean wasn't in bed, wasn't in the room with them. Still, no reason to panic. Dean's shoes were on the floor, his sweater on the back of the chair, barefoot and not dressed. Still, no reason to panic. Even though John felt his heart begin to beat so loudly, he was sure it would wake up Sam. He wasn't panicking, but he wasn't a fool either. He slid his gun into the waistband of his jeans and pulled a t-shirt down over his naked chest. He slipped his feet into his boots without lacing them. He opened the door and looked outside into the parking lot. The absence of any type of moonlight meant that the only light was coming from the red neon vacancy sign over the reception's office wall. It took some time for his eyes to adjust, and then he stepped out into the night air, pulling, but not closing, the door behind him. He walked quietly past the window to his room, and then past the next. He walked past the only other vehicle on this side of the lot, nothing. Then he got to the Impala. He didn't know why he stopped before Dean saw him. He just did. At first he thought that Dean was listening to someone. That's what it looked like, but there was no one there. Dean, wearing only his sweats, leant against the trunk of the car and shook his head. He didn't make a sound. John scanned the area next to Dean carefully. He wasn't psychic, not by any stretch of the imagination, but years of contact with the unnatural world that hid in the dark had tuned his senses, made them more acute. He saw the area of darkness next to the car shimmer. It was not his imagination. Dean wasn't alone. He was suddenly full on alert. Dean was there, within a few feet of whatever it was, and he didn't even notice it, had his back to it. One thing John knew about the things that lived in the darkness was that they could be unpredictable. If he made it known that he had noticed it, it could do anything. The most obvious reactions, the most predictable. It could leave, or it could attack. As he walked towards Dean, it did neither. It merely stayed where it was, not advancing or retreating. It was immobile. Dean? Dean smiled when he turned and then limped towards him. What are you doing out here, son? It's cold and you're not dressed. Dean swung his left hand around and pointed to the car. Just looking. John wrapped his arms around his son's shoulder and led him back to their room, keeping one eye on the space next to the car where the thing in the darkness still remained. Don't worry, son. She's been well looked after. He was presented with the full beam of a classic Dean Winchester smile. John couldn't help but respond in kind. He led Dean back into the room and looked once more at the entity that still shimmered in the darkness. Then he closed the door. Dean silently lay on the bed, and John pulled the blankets back up over him. You need to go to sleep now. It'll be a long day tomorrow, and I can't guarantee that we'll stop again before we get to Missouri. Resisting the urge to run his hands through his son's long hair, he walked around the room to check on the salt that Sam had put down earlier. Now that he knew there was something outside, he was not prepared to take any chances. He put more on the threshold of the door to replace what had been broken up by Dean's late-night wandering. When he got to the window, he pulled back the curtain to see whether it was still out there. When the hell were these windows last cleaned? He couldn't see anything. Well, if it was out there, it was sure as hell not getting in. One last look at Dean, staring at the ceiling, and he locked the door. If Dean got up while he was asleep, he would not be going back outside to check on the bloody car. John recalled the passage in the file about Dean's nightmares, and wondered whether they had been the reason for him wandering away tonight. He looked over at Sam, still asleep, and kicked off his boots. Dean started watching his brother sleep. When Dean was little and had nightmares, Mary would allow him to climb up onto their bed, and she'd tell him stories. He'd always be asleep before she got to the end. He decided he'd take a leaf out of Mary's book, do what she would have done in this situation. He climbed up onto the bed behind his son. He'd never been much of one for reading his kids' bedtime stories. That dude had always been Dean's when Sam had demanded one. Dean rolled onto his back so that he could see his dad's face. He returned the smile John gave him as he turned his body so that he was half-facing his father. "Story?" John racked his brains, thinking of something he could tell his boy. He couldn't remember any of Mary's, and besides, they'd hardly be appropriate given that Dean was no longer 3 years old. Then it came to him. Being careful to keep his voice low, just loud enough for the audience of one, he began. "It was snowing, Dean, the day you were born. You were early. Would you believe you were due on Valentine's Day? Your mother loved the idea. She was a romantic. You had other thoughts, though. I wasn't at home when the pain started. It was Wednesday, and for some reason I can't remember why, it was Mike's day off, so I was actually going to be working late. She claimed she didn't know she was in labor. I very much doubt that. She just wanted to see me squirm. She wanted to see me panic about how I was going to get her to the hospital when the snowstorm was so heavy I could hardly see. You started coming sometime in the morning, but she didn't phone me at the garage at all that day. I got home from work, and she still didn't say anything. It was during dinner when she told me. I think at that point she accepted that you weren't going to wait for another 3 weeks, and something needed to be done." Sam didn't let his father know that he was awake. He just lay there and listened. He listened as his father carried on with the story long after he'd been accompanied by Dean's gentle snores. The Innocent, Chapter 4. Sam pulled the fragile cardboard box from underneath the back seat and looked at the assembled collection of tapes. He wasn't sure whether they would still play. Being stuck in the car, which could get pretty hot at times, had the unfortunate side effect of warping tapes so that they sounded like a product of a spaced-out gothic hippie on a short-circuiting synthesizer. He hadn't been sure that they'd still be there. He knew that he'd not thrown them away, just didn't know whether Dad had. They'd held on to a lot of Dean things at first. Some stuff they'd dropped off at Fieldcrest, the rest... There was this one time they'd been sorting through the trunk, getting rid of things that were of no use, or that were broken. There was these new weapons that Dad had inherited from... someone. Never had said who. And they needed to find room for them. There'd been this hat. It must have fallen through into the hidden weapons compartment and been forgotten, without thinking it had gone to the trash. It had been a couple of hours and 120 miles later that he had remembered Dean wearing that stupid woolen hat one time they ended up in Oregon in January. He'd been bitching about the wind giving him a headache, and then he turned up in the hat. Dean had looked funny in that hat. Funny, and about 12. The memory had hit him like a sledgehammer. He'd had the sudden urge to turn around and drive back to the dumpster it had ended up in. It hadn't just been that hat. Things had just kind of started disappearing. There was no real logic about what they still kept of Dean's. Sentimentality didn't really apply to the Winchesters. It might have been different if Dean died, but he hadn't. He'd just been... gone. He stuck the first tape into the car stereo and listened as the sound of a cat being strangled underwater assaulted his ears. He flipped it off. So much for Led Zeppelin. Some of these tapes had to be good, and he'd find them. It would be so much easier if they switched a tape deck for a CD player. The loud child, hidden in the corner, was wearing a Superman t-shirt and blue jeans. He was a stranger, but with his brown hair curling down to his shoulders, there was something familiar about him. Propped up in the diner's only high chair, screaming at the top of his lungs, there was something familiar about the whole scene. He watched the parents, who seemed to be getting more and more frustrated by the glances being thrown their way from other patrons of the diner. They tried to coax the boy with the little plastic police card that he had already thrown to the floor half a dozen times. They tried to distract him with the cut-up pancakes that ended up being squashed between his fists. And that child wasn't happy. "Dean?" He looked across at his dad. Something about the way he was looking at him made him realize that an answer to a question was expected. He just didn't have a clue what the question was. John looked across at the family with the loud brat as the wailing broke through another threshold. That boy could shatter glass, and was driving him, and no doubt everybody else, crazy. "Breakfast, Dean. What do you want?" Dean looked at the menu that was resting on the table in front of him. Looked. His eyes scanned the words in the pictures with determined concentration. There were illustrations next to some of the words, but not all. Dean frowned and then picked up the laminated card, trying to decipher the symbols that were emblazoned across it. It was only then, watching his son stare with confusion at the words, that John realized what an absolute fool he'd been. He picked up the offending card. "You don't need this. But I know what you like. When you were 8, you couldn't get enough pancakes and syrup." Dean was gnawing his bottom lip. "Not 8. The words were barely more than a whisper. Dean suddenly looked close to tears, and he was twisting the fingers of his right hand with his left. "Way to go, John." "I know you're not. Come on. You need to eat because you shouldn't be taking your meds on an empty stomach." Dean frowned. That wasn't true. He had his pills a lot of times when he hadn't eaten. Didn't matter, he was hungry. He enjoyed the pizza last night, but pizza didn't seem to be an offer here, and Sam had eaten everything that had been left. "What can I get you?" The woman was looking directly at him. Below the dyed red beehive, she had a face that could have frozen water. Dean smiled at her, hoping to cheer her up. It didn't work. "I'll have pancakes, with a side of bacon. My son will have the same." The waitress wrote it down and walked away. Well, she was a ray of sunshine, wasn't she? Dean smiled at his father, his earlier upset already forgotten. A piercing screech and Dean's attention is once again drawn to the child on the other side of the diner, still screaming, red-faced with what looked like oatmeal all through his hair. When the food arrived, the two men ate in silence. Dean didn't eat his bacon, but after pouring almost half a bowl of syrup onto his pancakes, he thoroughly enjoyed them. It occurred to John that he'd either have to give Dean a chance to do his usual exercises, or they'd have to start watching his diet. It wasn't an immediate worry. He was too thin anyway. Besides, at this point, Dean looked happy. That was enough. Sam appeared just as they were finishing and ordered a coffee. Dean looked at his brother, who was now, at least from this perspective, almost side by side with the child that was providing his assembled audience with an encore. Dean smiled. He remembered. Sam frowned and glared before sitting next to his brother. "Headache much?" "Yeah, he is noisy, isn't he?" John reached into his pocket to retrieve the phone that was vibrating silently against his chest. "Caller ID," said Father Jim. "I'll just take this outside." Sam watched as their father went outside to lean against the car, his gaze once again falling on the child screaming in the corner. "Hey, Dean, I think I used to have a t-shirt like that." "Hey, what are you laughing at, Dean?" A patchwork quilt of color swept across the sky in front of them. The pinks and oranges were already giving way to deeper purples and scarlets as the sun slowly slipped below the horizon. The look on his father's face when they had returned to the car had been cut off, remote. It had to be something to do with the phone call from Father Jim, but he refused to say what it was about. One more secret that John Winchester refused to share. He hadn't pressed it, though. No point in making the rest of this trip more difficult than it already was. There had always been a measure of tension between him and his dad, even before what happened with Dean. The relationship hadn't improved with Dean's absence. They'd just learned to channel the animosity into the job. Yeah, okay, sometimes they still had fights. Sometimes, when the pressure got too much, they were even physical. But they had learned to live with each other. John still worked on a need-to-know basis. That's what had Sam riled more often than not. His dad had some belief that he could protect Sam from some things as long as Sam didn't know about them, like where he had managed to get the money for Dean's surgery and hospital bills. How he had been able to pay for Fieldcrest for the last 4 years. Having Dean with them, the tension was different. Now they had to think about how any row would affect his brother, how any argument could not be allowed to get out of hand because Dean needed them both. Guilt was making things worse. They stopped briefly at a drive-thru, picked up food, and ate on the move. Something was up. His dad was definitely more determined than ever to get to Missouri's as soon as possible. They wouldn't be stopping at a motel again. He slipped one of Dean's tapes into the deck and let the music of Creedence fill the silence. Not too loudly, though, because his brother was already dozing on the back seat. Missouri knew they'd arrived before John even knocked on the door. It wasn't that she'd heard the car engines as it crawled into the space in front of her home. This term had successfully managed to drown that out. No. Missouri Mosley had felt them arrive. John's and Sam's presence were familiar. Her mind recognized the way they thought, as you would a familiar voice. There was a bit of anger in the way Sam's mind was churning, another row brewing between father and son, no doubt. She hadn't seen much of them in the last few years, since Dean had been gone, but she'd always been able to feel the tension, the self-doubt. Sam truly believed that John saw him as a pale imitation of his brother, a disappointment. If only the boy would talk to his father. That brought her to John. That man was just as bad. Two peas in a pod they were. So similar in so many ways, so stubborn. John's mind was open to her, always had been. He tried to put barriers up once and then realized she could read him anyway. John was fiercely protective. His thoughts were more laced with emotion than he ever showed externally. He loved his boys to distraction, and he feared for them. Tonight, though, that fear was tinged with something else. There was a sense of immediacy about it. The only way Dean's thoughts had ever been like his father's was in that he, like John, hid his feelings behind a mask of indifference. Not anymore, though. Dean. Oh, Dean. It had been a long time since she had felt his presence. That young man had been a force to be reckoned with, a charmer, a rogue. Handsome as any Hollywood movie star, and he knew exactly what to do with the looks that the Lord saw fit to bless him with. His thoughts had been like him, fiercely defensive and protective of his family, not so forgiving of what he thought of as his own weaknesses, his own failings. This Dean was different. This Dean. No, that would be a wrong thing to say. Insulting, even. He was not a shadow of his former self. This Dean was just as important, just as valuable as an individual. He was just different. He was still devoted to family, but he had no real sense of what he wanted for himself beyond the immediate desire to stay with Sam and John. It was as if his family's desertion had magnified his previous lack of confidence in his own worth. He was frustrated by his inability to do all the things that he used to be able to do. He hated the way his independence had been stolen. He hated the situation that he was in, but he didn't blame anyone for it, except for perhaps himself. There was something more, not something Dean was consciously trying to hide, but something that was hidden nevertheless. She answered the door and welcomed the three men into her house. Missouri poured coffee into the cup and handed it to John, who was sitting at her table. Well? Getting right to the point then, eh? She smiled at him. You only arrived 5 minutes ago. She sat in the chair next to him and took a sip from her own cup. Supper will be ready shortly. Did you pick anything up or not? He knew he was being impatient and rude, but this was important. She didn't respond to his abruptness, just spoke softly, soothingly. John, there is something that Dean is hiding. Something he knows which he is keeping to himself. John frowned. He's lying to me? Not intentionally, John. There is no desire to lie to you. She thought carefully about the words she used with John. The man demanded honesty from his boys, always had. He would not tolerate deception. There is something he knows which he is keeping hidden, even from me. He doesn't know why, just that he has to. She got up and checked the homemade soup that she had simmering on the stove.
Is it about this danger you spoke of?
I don't think so, no. He's not afraid of this secret.
John deflated a little, feeling wary, feeling so much older than his years. There's something, isn't there?
That's what I was about to ask. John looked up and saw his youngest son glaring at him. Missouri turned to the youngest Winchester. She could see the animosity pouring off him.
What did Father Jim want when he spoke to you yesterday?
John didn't flinch at Sam's obvious fury. He really was in the mood for a fight with one of his kids right now.
There was a fire at Fieldcrest the night after we left.
Accidental?
Doubtful. Jim says that other things were reported in the area. Some hunters were in the area just passing through. They told Jim that it seemed like a door had been unlocked.
Sam stepped further into the kitchen and stood as close to his father as the width of the table he was sat at.
Over 80 years, you said. 80 years of nothing happening. We take you away and everything goes to hell?
Missouri turned off the pan and sat down next to John.
Was anybody hurt?
Fire started in one of the rooms. One nurse died in the fire. Two residents died later in the hospital from smoke inhalation.
Sam looked at his dad, the sick feeling in the pit of his stomach telling him that he already knew the answer to the next question.
Which room did the fire start in?
His dad's silence confirmed his suspicions.
The Innocent, Chapter 5. Where is your brother? In front of the TV, Sam shut the door securely, a barrier between Dean and what was being discussed in this room. John relaxed slightly. Dean didn't need to know about the trouble he left in his wake, especially if the people who had died were people he knew and cared about. John thought briefly of the nurse, Kathleen, and hoped, despite his dislike for the woman, that she was not among the casualties. She had cared for Dean, and he would not have been surprised if Dean had been quite fond of her. Missouri returned her attention to the stove. Despite whatever may be coming their way, people need to eat. I've made up both guest rooms. Which way do you want to organize your sleeping arrangements? Despite his desire to keep an eye on Dean, the boy was used to having a room of his own. That was more than he'd ever had when he was with his family. The boys have the beds. I'll have the sofa if you don't mind. Missouri smiled. I have a cot in the basement if you want to move that upstairs. I'm sure Dean won't complain if he had to share a room. Shit, that woman always knew what he was thinking. Mind your P's and Q's, John Winchester. I won't tolerate bad language in my house. It was cold outside. He knew it was even before he stepped out the front door. Not that the knowledge made him put his coat back on. It wasn't important. He walked down towards his dad's car and touched the cold metal. Moonlight reflected off the hood. When he passed his hand into the light, it seemed to glow. He spent a lot of time in this car. He had memories. Some of them even made him smile. This was a nice car. He used to be able to drive it. He used to drive it, and Sam would complain about the music, and about the speed, and about how he would turn corners too fast. It had been home. He remembered his mom had been in this car when he was very little, and Sam had come home for the very first time in it. He'd been a kid in this car. He'd grown up in it. A sudden gust of wind ruffled his hair and made him look up, away from the object that represented everything he'd lost. It was there in the shadow of the tree in next door's garden. It wasn't hiding. He had no reason to hide. It was waiting for him. He wasn't surprised. He turned his back on the car and rested his body against it, laying it bare some of his weight. He looked towards the house he'd just left, ignoring his company for a short time. There were two lights on that he could see, one in the living room that he'd just left, the other coming from the kitchen window on the other side of the house. They were in the kitchen, talking about him. He wished his father wouldn't treat him like he would break. He was more emotional now, that was true, but he wasn't completely broken. He wasn't useless. He was getting better all the time. He stretched his leg, the bad one. It hurt sometimes, even though the injury that stopped it working properly was in his head. It hurt now. The arm never hurt that much. It just wasn't very cooperative. He flexed his arm, experimentally. Wind howled past him, through the air, chilling him to the core. The branches on the old apple tree groaned with the sudden movement. Beneath the tree it began to move. He waited as it got closer. The day that Dean had been hurt had been cold and wet and miserable. The weather had reflected the mood in the car almost perfectly. "Can you turn that damn thing off? I got a headache." Sam was whining. "Tough out, big guy." Dean was still having a hard time with having his little brother towering over him. Absolutely against the laws of nature for your baby brother to be bigger than you. "You could have waited with Dad, you know. You chose not to." Dean kept his eyes on the road, the spray making it very hard to see through the windscreen. Like I was going to stay with him. There was venom in his voice. Dean risked a quick glance at his not-so-low brother. "Look, you asked for it. How the hell could you even think of inviting someone home, Sam? You knew he was going to be there, and you know how he feels about keeping family stuff, private. You bring people home. Hell, Sam, when I bring them home, they're not there for more than a couple of hours. I never turn on light, and we go straight to my room. Besides, Dad's never there." "You fucking embarrassed me, Dean, going off like that, treating me like I was 12 or something." The person he'd attempted to bring home was someone who was going to college. Not Stanford, like him, but someone who'd applied and had managed to get in. Someone who he could talk to about the whole college thing. Someone he could share his excitement with. It wasn't as if he could talk to his family about it. "He'll calm down." Dean found himself slowing further as visibility was almost non-existent. "This is great, Sammy. Me and Dad in the haunted house, in the middle of a freaking thunderstorm." Lightning lit up the inside of the car. "Just like the movies. You scared?" "Yeah, right, bitch. You just keep your eye on my back and I'll keep mine on yours." They pulled off the main road and started up the long, tree-lined approach to where they were meeting their father. Dean flipped the music off, not making a concession to his brother's lousy mood, just acknowledging that they had almost reached their destination. "Thanks. Dude, Dad'll be gone again soon. You know he doesn't like to let the grass grow. A week or two, he'll be off on another one of his solo jaunts. It'll be just you and me, and you can bring anyone home that you want." Sam looked at his brother, still focused on the road ahead. God, he felt like a complete shit. Dean's trying to make him feel better, wanting to reassure that it'll just be the two of them. He's planning on being gone himself soon. Dean would never forgive him for this. Their dad's truck was parked in front of the Marlowe house. You almost couldn't see it at all until you were right next to it. The rain wasn't letting up. More lightning. The thunder followed only a short distance behind. Dean killed the engine and turned to his little brother. "Be nice. If we have to split up into two teams, just stick with me, all right?" Dean pulled his collar up around his neck before he climbed out of the car. Sam's door slammed only moments later. Dean ran up the steps to the covered porch where his father was waiting. "Did you get it?" "Sure, Dad. But how come you ran out of holy water anyway? I thought you had a 10-gallon tank of that stuff." John grumbled something about leak and fucking knife, but a loud clap of thunder that accompanied another flash of lightning almost drowned him out, and Dean couldn't quite make out what had happened with the knife to cause a leak. The look his father gave Sammy was enough for him not to bother even thinking about asking again. "So what's the plan?" John looked up at the house. There seems to be more than one spear in the house. It looks like Jackson Marlowe didn't die alone. Can you believe that crazy father of his actually had him buried inside the house? It was Sam's turn to mutter something. Luckily, John didn't seem to be paying too much attention. Either that, or he were deliberately ignoring the comment about control freak dads. I mean, bloody hell, Sam. There's a time and a place, and the middle of hunt, even an easy one like this, isn't either. Dean turned to his dad. Any idea on the identity of the other spirit? Just what Cale Hawkins said about it being a girl. Description fits both Jackson's wife and his sister. We'll just have to hope that she's interred with Jackson. Yeah. Dean felt the rain trickling a path down the back of his neck. The porch roof was doing a shit job of keeping the rain off. At least once they got the show on the road, they'd be undercover. How do you want to do this? John looked at both his boys. If I start in the basement, you start in the attic. Well, me on the second floor. His crazy old man could have put him anywhere. So trick walls. Under floors, everything. We'll have to move the body anyway.
I don't think Hale would appreciate us torching the place. John turned to his youngest son. You better get the shotgun, Sam. You're with me.
Maybe with me, don't you think?
John glared at Dean. It wasn't like his eldest to contradict him, but he could see the expression on Dean's face. He knew Dean hated the fighting, the arguing that seemed to be almost constant these days. Sam was restless. John could see it. Dean refused to. If they weren't careful, they'd wake up one morning and Sam wouldn't be there. He didn't need a sulking teenager to keep him company tonight. Okay, he'd give Dean what he wanted.
Okay.
Sam ran back to the car to get the required weapons from the truck. The look John gave Dean a clear message. You get your way this time, but don't second-guess me again. The rain poured in from the holes in the roof. Typical. Still getting rained on. Twin flashlight beams lit up the corner. They swept across the halls, looking for a discoloration in the motor. Any indication that bricks had been removed from and then replaced in the wall. Looking for loose boards would really have been easier in daylight. Another flash of lightning and the whole place lit up. Every corner, every shadow eradicated. There was something there. A blur, a shadow, a something. Torchlight showed nothing. You're losing it.
There's nothing up here, Dean.
That better not be your whiny voice, little brother. We'll give this place another 5 minutes. What is it with you? You missing Daddy that much you want to go downstairs and meet up with him?
Thunderd muffled the fuck you, Dean, that came back in response.
Despite the chill rain still seeping through his clothes, Dean laughed. Couldn't help it. Sam could be such a serious bitch sometimes. The guy really needed to lighten up. Another flash of lightning, and Dean was certain that what he'd seen in the corner was a trick of the light, an optical illusion caused by the sudden flash. He directed the torchlight to fill the area of the attic once again, but still revealed nothing. He had been almost certain that he'd seen something in the lightning flash. Something that was just a blur. Something that wasn't there if he relied on his torch. Maybe this thing requires natural light to be seen. Lightning was natural light, right? It wasn't simply sunlight that could be classed as natural. And maybe I'm just tired. He was just about to call Sam over, get his dad, when he heard his father calling. Still not sure that it was the right thing to do, leave the attic with his possible secrets, he started towards the door. Dad sounded insistent. He turned to make sure that Sam was following him. The lightning that flashed then revealed nothing. They were alone. He sighed. Yeah, must be tired. John had found the body walled up in an alcove of one of the bedrooms. He would never have seen the change in the brickwork if the current residents hadn't spent days stripping the paper off the walls before they'd been scared enough to leave. Jackson Marlowe lay on the floor of the room he had no doubt once walked through. It was even possibly the room his father had killed him in. Jackson Marlowe's body was alone. The other spirit, whoever she was, hadn't had her body walled up with Jackson, hadn't been victim to the same incident that caused Jefferson Marlowe to kill his son who had threatened to leave the family house. Sam looked at his father and wondered how different John Winchester was to Jefferson Marlowe. He didn't believe his father would kill him for wanting to leave. But like Jefferson, he would probably see as a betrayal. He watched as his father and Dean dragged Jackson's body, now a little more than a skeleton, deeper into the room, before lifting it onto the sheet that was already spread out.
"What about the other one?"
asked Dean as he wrapped the body in the sheet, which had already been soaked in a generous solution of salt and holy water. John picked up his torch and directed it back towards the hole in the wall. "She's not here. Jackson's the one that's causing all the damage. Let's deal with him, and then we'll see about finding her."
Can't blame him for being pissed. His dad killed him just because he wanted a different life.
Dean looked up, about to tell Sam, no doubt, to drop it. Not to start a row now, but his expression changed almost as soon as his eyes caught Sam. No, something behind Sam. Dean dropped the bundle in his hands and raced to where his baby brother was standing. Pulled his brother towards him, pushed him out of the way. By the time Sam turned around, Dean was already on the floor.
The Innocent, Chapter 6. He had an almighty headache brewing, and it had nothing to do with the fact that his brother had gone AWOL. He trusted that, even now, Dean wouldn't do anything stupid. Actually, he thought that Dean was less likely to do something stupid now than he had been before. The Dean of old often took unnecessary risks to get the job done. Okay. So maybe they weren't unnecessary, that was unfair, but he often put his neck on the line for the sake of someone else. He was never his own first priority. This Dean, this mellow, considerate, thoughtful Dean would. Hell,
he would still probably put other people first. But he wasn't an adrenaline junkie. He didn't thrive on the rush, on the hunt, on the kill. He probably needed to just get away, have some space. Probably wasn't used to someone being there, watching over him every second of the day and night. He had to admit that he didn't have a clue about how Dean saw the world now, about how he saw the crusade that he'd been raised to fight. Dean had never been one for talking, at least the old Dean hadn't been. Maybe the new one, the one that was out there somewhere in the cold, would be amenable to talking about how he felt, what he wanted out of life. Ironic, really, that one of the things taken away from Dean was an ability to communicate effectively with words. He knew there were other priorities right now, like finding Dean, but he couldn't help thinking about the future, Dean's future. If they got through this crisis, if they survived the danger that was stalking Dean, if Dean did, what next? Dean could not go back to Fairview. That was no longer an option. Even if the fire hadn't destroyed half the place, even if the supernatural hadn't started exerting its presence on the area, Sam wouldn't have been able to face the idea of sending Dean away again. Yes, seeing Dean again had been hard, but not seeing him, that had been so much harder. The last couple of days had made Sam feel like the big brother. It had given him an appreciation for the way Dean had taken care of him, looked out for him. Just as Dean would never abandon Sam, would never consider it, Sam knew that he would never be able to turn his back on his brother. Not again. He'd done so last time for purely selfish reasons, and he couldn't deny it. Hunting was not an option for Dean anymore. He wasn't physically up to it. Maybe he could stop now, too. It wasn't something he thought about for himself since he'd given up his dreams of college. But maybe he could. Maybe. Dean's file said that he could live an independent life away from any kind of institution. Keeping him at Fairview had been convenient for Dad. That's all it came down to, really. Dean could have left, could have tried for some sort of independent living, but he never attempted it. Sam figured he knew why. Dean wouldn't have been able to go and live just anywhere. He would need to stay close to a hospital for his therapy sessions. He wouldn't have been able to work either, so financial support would have been needed, too. If the offer was made, though, the offer to let him sell somewhere where he wouldn't be alone, in a place where he could make decisions for himself, would Dean take the chance or turn the opportunity? Sam could protect him from any supernatural dangers that may attempt to take advantage of his weaknesses. Assuming Dean let him, of course. That would be a big if. He could already see Dean throwing obstacles in his path, resenting Sam's attempts to take care of him. He wasn't certain he could do it, though. He could. Maybe Dean wouldn't even notice that he was doing it. Maybe. Maybe he could find a way to make Dean believe that he was doing Sam the favor. It was something to consider. Dad could be more of an impediment to his plans, though. He wouldn't like the idea of both of his sons out of the hunt. Wouldn't like it at all. Maybe a compromise could be reached, Sam going off on occasional hunts with his father, but living with Dean most of the time. That was a hell of a lot of maybes. Despite his dad's assertion that Dean wouldn't remember the house they once lived in, it had, of course, been the first place he'd driven to. Sitting low in the seat, he allowed his eyes to study the house that was an absolute mystery to him. Perhaps, in some alternate universe, if you believed in that kind of thing, the Winchesters still lived there, John and Mary having the occasional visit from their fully grown sons, who may have had families of their own by now. He sat and stared at the house, parked outside, engine running, attempting not to look suspicious in any way. The last time he needed it was for the new occupants to call the police, although maybe that's what they did need to happen. Dean was missing, after all. He had to admit, though, that Winchester interaction with law enforcement didn't generally work out in their favor, and was best avoided if it could be. He sat in the same position before, looking at the very same view. It's true that he didn't remember ever living in that house, but he had once sought it out himself in one of their rare visits to this town. His curiosity had gone away from him. Dean had refused to go with him, a strange melancholy clouding his appearance at the mere suggestion of it. Dean could remember living there, the life that he had there. Even if it only lasted a short time, he could remember the woman his father had called Mary. Mom. Maybe that was right. Maybe Dean wouldn't come here, but not for the reasons Dad gave. Not because he wouldn't remember, but because he would remember too much. Memories had a tendency to be painful sometimes. There was evidence in the garden that kids lived there now. A turned-over pink bicycle, a small football. It was a family home, just like it was supposed to be. But it wasn't his anymore. It never really had been. Dean wasn't here, or on any of the streets that lay between Missouri's and here. He drove away from the house, slowly pulling away from the curb, keeping his eyes on the house in the rearview mirror. It would be just his luck for Dean to put in an appearance just as he pulled away. He didn't show. After a little while, Sam found himself turning the car off the road where that house lay. Driving in an ever-increasing spiral from Missouri's house, subconsciously creating his very own search pattern, he realized that soon he would have to turn back, retracing his path. There wasn't really much of a chance of Dean having made it much farther in the time he'd been missing, not the way he moved. That was searching on foot, keeping near Missouri's. Dean could be anywhere, in the yard, in the footpath. Could have attracted his attention. There's no guarantee that Dean would follow a sidewalk just because it was there. He remembered the games they played as kids, games in which one of them deliberately lost himself while the other had to track him down. Dean was always better at getting lost, better at tracking too. There had been this one time when Dean had kept himself lost for almost 2 days. Dad had been alternately freaked, angry, and worried, and proud. Sam had sucked at finding his brother and eventually had to admit defeat and ask his dad for help. He couldn't remember Dean ever having to do that. Memory was a funny thing. Things that you wanted desperately to remember could elude you, while things best left forgotten could run up to you and bite you on the ass. That day Dean was hurt and still a vivid memory that haunted Sam's night. During the day there was usually ample distractions, but lying in bed waiting for sleep that was eluding him to come to his mercy, he relived it. It had been every night at first, every night while Dean was still in the hospital. It had been less frequent as time had passed, but it had never left him completely. Last night, after Dad had talked Dean to sleep, and then had fallen asleep himself, he had turned and watched them. His dad and his brother, sleeping side by side. The old Dean would have accused him of being a girl if he ever found out that the sight had brought a lump to his throat. That was something he'd never seen before. They never got that close to each other. Not unless they were on a stakeout in some enclosed space, and they had no choice. He had almost succumbed to tears that was threatening to fall. Almost. That was something that he and Dean had had when they had been kids. But not with Dad. Never with Dad. It had always been easier to just curl up next to his brother when they were sharing the same bed, most of the time anyway. Sam looked at his brother's sleeping face. He'd listened to his father's hushed snores, and he remembered. There they'd been, in the fucking haunted house, in the early hours of the morning, Dad and Dean rolling up a skeleton, just one more thing in the daily lives of the Winchester that should have been surreal, but was actually quite mundane. Deal with the body to deal with the spirit. Jackson Marlowe's body had lain in the house a while longer before he was disposed of. Actually, it had lain there almost a week longer before Dad had been able to drag himself away from the hospital to finish the task. He'd never gone back to deal with the second spirit. He hadn't been able to help it. He really had been pissed at his father's attitude, an attitude that, like Jefferson Marlowe's, would cost him a son in the end. Dean had looked pissed at first, annoyed that he would have to stand between them as a buffer in yet another row, but his expression had changed almost immediately. He'd been looking up at Sam one moment, and then he'd been focused past him, beyond his shoulder. There had been something behind him. Dean shouted. Sam hadn't heard the words. Dean had grabbed him, had physically thrown him behind his body, shielding him from whatever was there, whatever Sam still hadn't had the opportunity to see. Sam had felt time, his heart, his lungs, just stop the moment he turned and saw his brother. It had nothing to do with the blood that was already pooling around his head, creating some strange, hellish version of a halo. No, that hadn't been it. It had been the knowledge then that the life he was in was the one he would never leave. He owed Dean his life. He owed Dean everything, and as Dean's blood stained the boards beneath his body, Sam wished they could change places. It had been a selfish thought, a thwarted escape. It had compounded his feelings of guilt. He still couldn't put it together. What had happened? Dean had seen something. The look on his face had been evidence of that, but whatever it had been gone when Sam turned. When Sam had started breathing, thinking again, though, to be honest, A vampiric elephant could have been standing there wearing a tutu, and Sam wouldn't have noticed, his attention firmly fixed on his brother. His attention, shit! Sam slammed on the brakes, focused on the future and the past. He really hadn't been paying enough attention to the present. Zuri! The psychic knew, before she even left the warmth of the kitchen, that Dean hadn't been found by his father. She sensed John's concern, had been able to sense it constantly since the realization that Dean was no longer in the house. The man, her friend, was a beacon of worry. It was washing off him, concern and fear for his son's safety. Missouri hadn't been able to stop them from leaving as soon as they discovered Dean had left the house. Once Sam had confirmed that he wasn't in the garden, he grabbed his coat and Dean's forgotten jacket, and had taken the car keys from his father. John had gone out on foot. Her efforts to dissuade them had proved fruitless. She told them that there was no immediate danger to Dean. Dean wasn't afraid. Wherever he'd gone, he had been coerced to go. He'd gone willingly. Lee had been unwilling to listen. She had felt her temper start to get the better of her. They claimed to value her judgment, trust her intuition, but on this they were willing to dismiss her view entirely. "He's not back here, then." It wasn't asked as a question, and Missouri didn't take it as one. She was finding it more and more difficult to rein in her frustration at the way the man was treating his firstborn. She noticed the way Dean reacted to being excluded, and she hadn't needed her skills as a psychic to do so. One hand swept through his hair and then rubbed the back of his neck. He hadn't worried about his boys wandering off since they were little. Actually, Dean had never wandered off, not since he'd been given the role of protective big brother. That role had actually meant that Sam hadn't done much absconding either. "He's not a child, John." Those were the words she'd used when he and Sam had raced out the door. They hadn't worked then. They weren't going to work now. "I'm not prepared to go into this with you." He was obviously afraid Missouri was unprepared to take the brunt of his emotions right now. "You need to think about this, John. Seriously think about it. That boy? And they'll give you that because he is your boy. He is not a child. Dream like one, that's hurting him. He doesn't like it." John glared at the woman who was attempting to judge him as a parent, a father. He didn't need someone else to do that. He was more than capable of seeing his own shortcomings in that area. "He might be in danger out there. You said it yourself." "I know what I said, John. Don't you dare try to put words in my mouth. I said that he wasn't in any danger now. Not now, John. Not when he walked out of the garden gate, and not when you and Sam went hightailing out of here without listening to me." She walked over to her friend before lowering her voice. "You came to me because you trusted me. You got Dean from that home because you trusted my gift. If you trust me, John Winchester, you have to listen to me." John felt the fight leave his body. What she was saying was true. He did do those things because he trusted her. But Dean wasn't the person he used to be. Wasn't able to defend himself like he used to. He worried about his kids, always had. Despite what they may believe, he worried about them. It came with the job of being their dad. Worry. It wasn't that he hadn't worried about Dean before. He had. But it was different now. Why couldn't she see that? Sam stared at the cat in the road. Fucking cat. He just sat there, watching him, not moving, blinking slowly. Fucking cat. He hadn't been paying attention to the road, and he'd slammed on the brake to avoid the freaking monster. He hated those feline furballs. Dean liked them, though. Liked their independent nature, liked the way they had the best of all the worlds. Cats, he said, were like them, hunters. They were beholden to no one. He had actually used that word, beholden. If someone was fool enough to feed them, they'd take advantage. Cats were opportunists. They stay put as long as there was something in it for them. Cats believed in sleep, food, the hunt, and sex. God, Dean was a cat. That little speech had risen when Sam had been moaning about wanting a dog. His friend's dog had a puppy, and wouldn't it be great? Dean had told him that dogs needed too much looking after, weren't independent. They couldn't look after themselves if they were missing a day or two. Cats could. He'd been 11. Dean had been 15. Dad had listened to both of them and had then said no. Put his foot down. No pets. At least not while they were still on the road most of the time. Dean wasn't bothered. He actually hadn't wanted a cat. He just didn't want to share the confines of their cross-country jaunts with the dog. Sharing the back seat, stopping for it to relieve itself, having it share motel rooms. He looked at that fat, ginger tabby and knew that it was sat there in front of his car to spite him. Cats had an uncanny ability to sense those that couldn't abide them. He knew that I had run out in front of his car to give him a fucking coronary. He should have just run over the blasted thing. As he put the car into reverse, eventually deciding that the cat was a movable object when they ignored every audible and visual message to fuck off, he heard the screaming start. Dean had walked, stumbled, and limped further in the last hour than he'd probably walked in the last 4 years. It wasn't at all comforting to know that he would once have made it here in minutes, at a jog and not a sprint, but today it had taken an hour, a whole hour. He hadn't had a particular destination in mind when he began to walk. He just followed his nose, turning when he wanted to turn, crossing the road when he hit a curb. He sighed and shook his head. He knew his father probably wouldn't allow him to attempt something as simple as crossing the road on his own. It wouldn't surprise him if Sam would have been reluctant, too. He found himself stopping every 10 minutes or so. The mind was willing, but the flesh was most definitely weak. The last few streets had been particularly difficult. His walk had become more of a hobble. His already pronounced limp had begun to resemble a parody of someone who was hurt. It looked fake. Every step became a struggle, as tired limbs resisted the push, but he carried on, pushing them regardless. He navigated around the town carefully, avoiding that one building that even the thought of made him relive the most devastating loss of his life. He remembered Lawrence, everything about it. He passed by the house where Tim Knight had lived. They played in the park together a couple times, their mom supervising them from a distance. Tim had been all right for a kid who constantly had a finger up one or other of his nostrils. He'd been bigger than Dean, but not much older. He'd been maybe 5. He had very vague recollections of his birthday party that he'd thrown up at. Yeah, Tim had been 5 and Dean had been 4, just turned. He'd kept going on about his brother, saying how great his big brother was. Dean had been envious at Tim's insistence that his big brother was the best big brother that had ever lived. Mom had told him, when he asked, begged, and pleaded, that it wasn't possible for him to get a new big brother all of his own. No, she said, that wouldn't happen. But one day, soon, very soon, he'd get to be one. He had to accept it. Dad had agreed with Mom that they couldn't get him a big brother, though they wouldn't explain why. They also wouldn't explain how he'd get to be one. But he had, and he had not had to wait very long at all. He walked to the end of the street to check that his shadow was still, in fact, shadowing him. He didn't know why he checked. It was always there, somewhere, lingering. It was difficult to make out in the gloom. The clouds had covered the almost full moon, blocking its light entirely. The street lamps weren't sufficient to light the whole street. There was a stretch between the cascade of light from each post about 5 feet, where darkness reigned. A cat darted out from under one of the hedges, sat and looked up at him expectantly. Dean ignored the miniature tiger. He was looking for something else. Where was it? After all 30 seconds, he gave up looking. It would be there even if it was behaving uncharacteristically distant. He didn't know why he would want to hide. Only he had ever been able to see it. He was sweating. He really needed to stop, needed to sit, rest his leg. He crossed the street carefully, waiting until the light traffic stopped completely. He needed a lot of time to cross, stopping halfway to catch his breath. The park hadn't changed much. A new swing set in the pond was gone, that was all. He could see a couple of teenagers down there, boys and girls both, laughing, joking, drinking. He stopped when he got to the old wooden bench, sinking onto it gratefully. Rubbing the twitching muscles of his thigh, he bent down further to get at the calf. He sensed her presence long before he heard her voice. "Hello, baby." He turned to see her, smiling as she sat down next to him. She looked just like she had the last time he'd seen her. She sighed. "I expected you at the house. I waited. Didn't realize you were avoiding the place." She spoke through a smile. She was almost making a joke of the possibility that he had been avoiding her. He watched as the wind caught her golden hair, picking up and then letting it fall back down gracefully over her shoulders. He hated the thought that she might believe he hadn't wanted to see her. It had been so long. "Don't speak to me, baby. I know you find it hard. Think to me. That's what you do, isn't it? Just think to me. You know I'll hear you." He looked across at her. "It's not that I didn't want to see you." She smiled. "I know that. I just couldn't go there, to that house." He was beginning to feel the cold now that he wasn't moving, the sweat cooling rapidly on his body. One of the girls screamed down by the swings. Dean tensed but relaxed as soon as the laughter replaced the screaming. "I've missed you." They sat in silence for a little while, the son trying to gather his thoughts, the mother giving her son time to do so. He felt something around his ankles and looked down to see the cat from across the street nuzzling against his leg. He bent down and rubbed it behind the ear. It responded to this bit of encouragement by jumping up on the bench when he straightened. It lay down with his head firmly on Dean's legs. As the ginger cat closed its amber eyes, Dean found the purring quite relaxing. It calmed him. "Dean, talk to me." He stopped stroking the cat, held his hand still. Even though he was thinking to her, the next words were quiet. They would have barely been a whisper if he spoke in them, but she still heard them nevertheless. "Everything's gone so wrong, Mom. Everything would have been better if... if I hadn't died?" She rested a hand on Dean's. No substance, but he could feel it. "Or if you had." He turned his head so that he could see her more clearly. "I'm broken, Mom." He moved his hand to his head, felt the concave evidence of his downfall. "They don't want me around anymore. They think I'm useless." "Then prove them wrong, sweetheart. You can do that, you know. You can prove to your father and your brother that they've made the mistake in underestimating you." They sat in silence once again. Dean trying to make out what the gang were up to, now that they had climbed off the swings. He saw the occasional flare of a cigarette lighter, but it was too dark, and they were too far away. "Did it hurt?" She looked down, letting her hair conceal her eyes for a short while. When she looked back, there were tears there, attempting to break through. "It hurt losing you, and Sammy, and your dad." Dean frowned, turning away. That isn't what he meant. "I know you're talking about the fire, Dean. I know you're talking about dying. I know that." She looked directly at him now, being blunt with her honesty. "Yes, it hurt. How couldn't it? But when that pain ended, when death finally came to collect me, I couldn't go. I stayed. I waited." Her voice softened. "Waiting hurt, Dean. I've never been the most patient of people. Used to get on your dad's nerves. Your nursery was ready for you more than 6 months before you were born. Sam's too. I hate waiting. Doesn't get any easier when you're dead. Waiting in that house with all those memories of what it was like to live there with my family hurt. Watching other moms with their kids hurt. Remembering what it was like to be someone's mom and never seeing my kids. That hurts. Missing you hurts." Dean raised his eyes to meet those that were so similar to his own. She smiled at him. He found his lips echoing hers. Dean was lost in the image of his mother's smile. The hand that wasn't resting on his moved to his head, found the dent. She moved forward and kissed him there. "How did you know I was here?" "You may not come by the house, but your brother has been there tonight. He's out looking for you." She giggled, speaking almost to herself. "I can't believe your dad still keeps that car." Dean loved the sound of his mother's laugh, always had. He relaxed back onto the bench, allowing the cold to seep in through the back of his shirt. Suddenly, his only source of warmth was gone. The cat moved so quickly, trying to get away, that it probably hadn't meant to claw his arm as it jumped up and over the back of the bench. Cat sensed the supernatural, he knew that. Had it drummed into him by a friend of Dad's when he'd been 8. That cat hadn't been bothered by Mom being here, so what had spooked it? He looked behind him, back towards the street, to see whether his constant companion had decided to do what a constant companion was supposed to do and accompany him. It was still too dark to see anything. He quickly scanned the darkness, but nothing was remotely visible in the distance. When he sailed back onto the bench, he realized that the kids down by the swings were coming towards the park exit, coming towards him. They were loud, screaming and shouting. There were 5 of them, 2 girls, 3 boys. All of them were in their late teens, early 20s. As they got closer, he heard snippets of conversations. "He's cute, if you like older guys. Pretty boy, I do. Bitch, fuck you, freak." The male's voices cut through the giggling voices of the girls. They were harsh, angry, threatening. As they got closer, he realized they were heading straight for him, and they were definitely the worse for wear. Drunk, and perhaps something else. His heart started racing. Despite himself, he could feel the insistent approach of fear. He didn't want to be scared of a gang of high teenagers. Where the hell was the justice in that? He turned to his mother, but she wasn't looking at him. She was looking at them. She kept her hand on his, letting him feel that she was still with him, letting him know that he wasn't alone.
The Innocent, Chapter 7. John gently placed his cell phone back onto the table, picked up the painted China cup, and drank the coffee Missouri handed him, throwing it straight back, even though it was hot enough to scald, barely noticing as the burn migrated from his throat, only to be masked by the ache that already laid in his chest. She watched him but said nothing, just took the cup then refilled it. If John needed something to do while he waited, and if that something was sitting in her living room, burning out his insides on her strongest coffee while talking to people on the phone and making idle small talk with her, well, so be it. She expected him to mention the contents of the conversation she had just overheard John's highly animated half of. The phone had rung barely 5 minutes earlier, and it was obvious that he had initially thought it was, hoped it was Sam. His expression had changed when he'd seen the caller ID. It had been his friend, Jim Murphy. She'd often heard the name Murphy mentioned by all of the Winchester men at varying times. Whether they agreed with some of the things he said or not, they always spoke of him with respect. Apparently, he'd been entrusted with the boys' care on occasion when they'd been younger. He'd also taught the boys exorcism rites, according to Sam. He was someone she had yet to have the pleasure of meeting, but if the man had the patience to be a friend of John Winchester's, then maybe she should try and arrange a meeting with him some day. That would be a very interesting conversation. Most men of the cloth she knew were not overly friendly when her talents were brought up. Any interesting clients lately? He didn't look up at her, kept his attention divided between the cup and the phone. Missouri smiled. He wasn't really interested, but she'd give him the distraction he needed. There was a young woman in last week who wanted me to let her late aunt know that she loved her and missed her.
Doesn't sound very interesting.
No? Well, maybe you need to be privy to both sides of the conversation. What was being said out loud and what was being kept on the inside, silent. Missouri sipped her own coffee. Unlike John's, hers had a cream in it, and it was a lot cooler. The niece? She spoke of love and missing her aunt. That's what she said. What she was thinking altogether, different. She thought about the wail and the anger she felt when she realized that she had been left nothing after nursing the old dear for years. She couldn't get over the apparent injustice of it, and, even though the old woman had been gone less than 3 weeks, she'd been hoping that there was another will in existence, or that there would have been some evidence that her aunt was a little senile when she had signed that one that had been read. That way, it would give her enough reason to contest it. She couldn't get over her 79-year-old aunt leaving everything to a 28-year-old handyman. John almost spat his coffee over the table when he choked, glancing up at Missouri, making sure that she wasn't making fun of him. That's more than a 50-year age difference. That's disgusting. The aunt probably didn't think so. Missouri found herself chuckling at John's horror when he had considered the mismatched couple. He probably had Dean cast in the role of the 28-year-old. Would he have been horrified if the genders had been reversed? Actually, knowing John, probably. You need to clean up your mind, John Winchester. Theirs was not that kind of relationship. The boy was actually a relative. Illegitimate, so the niece knew nothing about him. But the old girl wanted to take care of him, give him his due. It was quite entertaining listening to those two. The silence that followed stretched into minutes before John decided to speak again.
Jim Murphy is going to get back to me in the morning as soon as he knows everything about what's happening up in Maine. He wants to check on the route we took here, too, see if there's any evidence of something following us.
He held the china cup but didn't bring it to his lips.
The hunters in Fairview are looking into a few things up at the Fieldcrest home, doing a bit of research.
Do you trust these hunters?
John really wasn't sure whether or not she was making references back to their argument, trusting others with the safety of his son's welfare when he had second-guessed her.
He decided to ignore the possibility that her question was a reproach. He wasn't in the mood for an argument right now.
I know one of them. His name is Halloran, and he's a pretty decent hunter. He worked with Bill Harvell once or twice when I met him at Bill's place. He wasn't even in Maine on a hunt. Vacation, Jim said. Missouri smiled. A hunter on vacation? She wondered if this Halloran was a family man like John, whether or not he had kids. She knew that the Winchesters had occasionally had downtime in between hunts, but she couldn't imagine John ever planning an honest-to-goodness vacation. She almost smiled at the thought of John Winchester at the Magic Kingdom, and then stopped herself. It wasn't actually funny. It was tragic. They should have been able to enjoy vacations as a family. Disneyland was probably somewhere they may have gone if their lives hadn't taken the turn it had. As it was, the boys would have probably killed or hunted down everything there. A 6-foot talking mouse would definitely have been seen as something unnatural. Supernatural. She sighed. Is there any news on the cause of the fire? John gazed into his coffee cup with all the intensity of a fortune-teller staring into his crystal ball, hoping that it would reveal the answers to the mysteries surrounding his life. According to Jim, Steve Halloran told him that the local fire department can't pinpoint the cause. The fire started in Dean's room, and when Steve went in, there were definite traces of something. By something, you mean demon? I don't think so, no. There were no traces of sulfur, but EMF readings were erratic, wild in Dean's room, but almost non-existent in the corridor outside. So it's not your demon. John shook his head. He really didn't know whether he was relieved or disappointed. Having the demon, his demon, to contend with was always a danger he anticipated, expected. This was something new, something different, something else. One more supernatural danger to add to the ever-increasing list. John picked up the cell phone in front of him. Don't call him! Hmm? You know, Sam. If he's found Dean, he'd have phoned you. If he needed your help, he'd have phoned you. If there was something you needed to know, if Dean was hurt, he'd have phoned you. Bad news always travels fast. Since he's not back here yet, then he's still looking. He doesn't need you distracting him. She rested her hand on John's, pressing the phone back down onto the table. You need to trust your son. John didn't miss the unspoken. Both of them. Billowing mist left his mouth in short staccato bursts. His heart hammered inside the confines of his chest, threatening to escape. To reenact that classic scene with John Hurt when an alien wrought havoc during a Chinese meal in outer space. He could still feel her hand, her fingers slipping in between his, holding on tightly. He knew she was there, but her presence didn't instill the courage in him that he so desperately needed right now. For 4 years he had not had to contend with any confrontations. This would be the first, and from the appearance of this gang, it didn't look like it would be a nice easy transition back into the world of conflict. Of the 5, only 3 came close enough to be immediately threatening. The other 2 held back, either to act as backup if things went sour, or hopefully, because they possessed more sense than to seek out trouble when trouble wasn't looking for them. Maybe they were the ones that were sober enough, or had enough decency to leave someone sitting on the bench alone, alone. The one that sat next to him sank down into his mother's space, superimposing herself over her. She appeared at once his mother and not his mother. He found himself comparing the 2 women. Mary, a beautiful, calm, insubstantial spirit who had never hurt anyone else unless she had just cause. And the other, beach blonde, heavy black eyeliner, a poster girl for a junkie chick. To see both of them at the same time hurt his head. He turned away. Now that's not very nice. He didn't want to feel intimidated or scared. He really didn't. Fear was something you could cope with when you were capable of fending for yourself, fighting back. This was something he wasn't used to, didn't want to get used to. Fear was something you felt when you were confronted by hellhounds, black dogs, vengeful spirits, wendigos, werewolves, vampires, demons. Not something you felt when you were sitting in a park you played in as a kid. Not something you felt when you were sitting on the park bench with your mother. He was afraid, though. He hated the truth of it.
hated the churning of his stomach, the lump in his throat, the shiver down his spine and the goosebumps that were not caused by the cold. He hated all those things, and, despite the better nature that he had acquired with a blow to the head, he began hating those who were making him feel hate. The hate was spawning another feeling within him, another emotion that he had not felt in so very long. He began to embrace it, embrace the feeling that was smothering his fear, that was feeding on the steadily building hatred and frustration that had been threatening to overwhelm him. He couldn't feel his mother's hand on his anymore. It was still there. So was someone else's. "He thinks you're too good for you, Cal." He chanced a glance at the boy who had spoken. Boy. Man. He really couldn't tell. Head shaven, remaining stubble, treated with peroxide. Ring through his eyebrow. Tattoo of a spider's web on his neck. His eyes were sunken hollows in the pallid ghost-like face, which was marked with a very unhealthy sprinkling of acne scars. He could be younger than Sam. It was more than possible, but he looked so much older. It's been said that if you live a hard and difficult life, you age badly. By that reckoning, if this guy was younger than Sammy, then his little brother had had it easy while this guy had spent his formative years in the pits of hell. "Is that it? Do you think you're better than me?" The words were spat, and the voice held a threat, cold and deadly.
No.
His own weak voice was laying him down. Frustration and anger fueled each other, but he held himself still on the bench, not attempting to move away. Giggling from behind him, he turned because he hadn't noticed one of the gang circled the bench, only to have Kale put her hand on his chin, turning his head to face her before he could see who was there.
"Didn't your mother teach you no manners? It's not nice for you to turn your back on a lady, sugar."
Her hand squeezed, her nails digging into his skin painfully.
I don't.
"Don't what?"
Dean struggled to find the words, his tongue not obeying his thoughts.
"Want trouble."
"He's a retard." That was the guy with the web tattoo laughing, making fun of him.
"What's wrong, retard? That cat you're playing with got your tongue?"
"Retard don't want no trouble, Cal." That was coming from behind.
"Are you a retard, sweetie?"
She brought her mouth to his ear and whispered, "You're too pretty for a retard." He really didn't need this. He really didn't want the trouble that he knew was coming. He really couldn't see an out, though. Physically, there was no way of fending them off and running. Running wasn't an option. What was left of his pride wouldn't have allowed it even if his body had. If they beat him, if they killed him. A rush of thoughts filled his head, coming faster than he was used to. He found them difficult to process. He leaned forward, letting the air provide a barrier between his back and whoever was standing behind the bench.
"If he's too pretty, Cal, you want me to do something about it?"
He heard what had once been the familiar snick of a switchblade opening. He sensed rather than saw the movement behind him, a movement accompanied by the louder audible crack of bone snapping. The scream was loud enough to hurt his ears, but he didn't move. Cal suddenly looked even paler than she had moments before. She wasn't touching him anymore. She wasn't even on the bench. She was backing away with that caught-in-the-headlamp look. The guy with that tattoo was no gentleman. He ran without waiting for the girl, pushing past the two who were staring in horrified fascination at whatever was happening behind Dean's bench. Dean didn't turn. He didn't need to, because he knew what he would see if he did. He'd see the same thing that was being played out for him inside his head. The third one, short guy, bald head, being held up by his neck, kicking wildly as the arm that had held the blade hung at a peculiar angle from his body. He felt emotion draining from him, being leached away. Fear, frustration, hate, and the consuming anger that had come in response to the other three. Calm returned to fill the spaces inside as the other feelings were stolen. "Does he do that often?" She sounded angry, even though she appeared to be keeping the emotion in check. Dean turned to the blurry image that his mother was referring to. He'd known it wouldn't have been far away, but he hadn't expected this.
"No, it's, he's never done anything like this before."
"I'm glad he stopped you getting hurt, but I don't think I like your friend, Dean." Dean sat in silence. He didn't know what to say. This isn't something he had asked for. It wasn't something he had done. He couldn't bear the idea of her being angry at him. He had never thought of his shadow as a he, always it, and had never, ever considered it a friend. His friendship was not something he had sought. "I'm not angry at you, Dean." She moved from her seat on the bench and knelt in front of her son, the cold, damp earth not having any effect on the nightdress she was wearing. "Does your dad know about him?" Dean shook his head. "Maybe you should tell him. Perhaps while you're at it, you should tell him about everything you can do." Dean wasn't sure exactly what his mother meant. This was not something he had considered telling his father. One thing he knew was that supernatural things were not tolerated by Winchesters. The groans were getting more audible on the floor behind him, a liberal amount of cursing getting progressively louder. Dean rose unsteadily from the bench and looked at the mud-encrusted teen lying on the frozen ground, knife lying only a couple of inches from his useless hand. There were finger-shaped bruises around the boy's neck from where he'd been held up and shaken. It wasn't the first time that Dean had seen someone suspended above the ground by invisible hands. It wasn't generally a good thing, but he couldn't help but be grateful that it had defused a situation that could have escalated into something so much worse. He kicked the blade further away with the foot that actually did what it was supposed to, while he leaned his hip against the bench, allowing it to take the weight off his uncooperative limb. "You should leave before he gets up, or before his friends come back to help him." Was she sending him away? Dean turned to his mother, feeling relieved when her face was lit up by a smile. "Go on," she said. "Sam's over there on the road. Go. Go and meet him before he gets here, sees him, and starts asking questions." Dean sidesteps the boy on the ground and began walking towards the road. "Dean?" He stopped and turned.
"Yes?"
"If you get around to talking to your dad, could you ask him to come by the house? There's something there that shouldn't be, trying to cause trouble for the family that lives there now." Dean nodded, not really having to consider his mother's request. If he spoke to his dad, then he would certainly tell him what his mom had said. If.
The Innocent, Chapter 8. Sam almost ran towards the slow-moving figure, relief etched all over his face. His brother looked distracted, worried even, but not hurt, thank God. The limp was more pronounced than he had ever seen it. He figured that was due to this unscheduled hike. As he got closer, Sam noticed scratches on Dean's arm. Not bleeding, but angry, raised. They almost looked like... cat? "What are you doing all the way out here, Dean?" Sam stopped when he reached him, turned so that they were both going in the same direction. He wanted to hug him, hold him, shake the hell out of him for just getting up and leaving without saying a word to anyone. He didn't do any of those things. Dean looked up at his brother, frowned slightly, but didn't reply. Sam went back to the Impala and grabbed Dean's jacket off the passenger seat where he'd thrown it. He wrapped it around his brother's shoulders and shepherded him towards the car. Dean didn't shake off the physical contact, but still didn't talk to him, didn't even look up. He just kept looking back, over his shoulder, into the park, looking at something Sam couldn't see no matter how hard he tried. Sam was half tempted to run back into the park, see what was there that could have captured Dean's attention so completely that he was reluctant to leave it, but that was just one more thing he didn't do. He had his brother here in front of him, and it would be a while before he felt comfortable enough to let him out of his sight, not unless Dean would agree to a few conditions. Conditions he undoubtedly wouldn't like promising to stay put, saying where he was going, why he was going, how long he was going to be. It occurred to Sam that he was treating his brother like a child, exactly what he would criticize his dad for if John did it. But he couldn't help how he felt. He couldn't bear the idea that he could have lost Dean tonight. Dean stopped once more before he climbed into the car, gazing to the distance, back into the darkness he had emerged from only a couple of minutes before. After what felt like forever to Sam, but was in fact only seconds, he switched his focus to Sam. He smiled. It wasn't a cocky grin, though that would have been more than welcome, an echo of a person he had grown up with. It was, however, a smile that sent a message. Don't worry. I'm all right. Sam got it, received it loud and clear. Dean was trying to reassure him. As he looked at his brother, smile still held in his eyes, if no longer on his face, he was struck by the sudden conviction that Dean wanted to speak to him, and that whatever it was that he wanted to say was important. But almost as soon as the impression arrived, it vanished. Dean's countenance altered only slightly, but it was enough to know that he had reconsidered, closed off, wouldn't be saying anything. Sam sat back in the driver's seat the moment he secured the seatbelt that he'd never considered using himself round his brother. Dean hadn't commented at Sam's actions, even though he had scrutinized every movement of Sam's hands, his fingers, as they had fastened the belt around him. Dad's freaking out. Why'd you come all the way out here, Dean? He didn't. Couldn't admit that he himself had started to get more and more anxious, especially when he heard that scream. It hadn't sounded like Dean. But what the hell did Dean's scream sound like? He'd never heard it. No, it couldn't have been him, could it? Dean didn't scream. Never screamed. Ever. He'd shout, yell, curse, swear, even moan, groan, and whine occasionally, but no, Dean Winchester would never scream. For the briefest of moments, it looked as if Dean was going to answer, actually open his mouth and say something. But it was another false assumption. The hope dashed as soon as Dean turned away, set his jaw and stubbornly focused on some imaginary spot beneath the street lamp on the opposite side of the road. Whatever was going on inside his big brother's head, he had obviously made the decision that he didn't want to share it. Sam decided not to press his brother further. Not about the walk, the screaming, not about anything. The answers could wait until they got back to Missouri's. Preventing the coronary that was no doubt heading his dad's way was much more urgent. As he turned the car around, he fished his phone out of his pocket and speed-dialed his father's number. He only narrowly missed flattening the cat that had been lying beneath the car, absorbing the engine's heat on such a cold evening. John was waiting at the door when the car pulled up Missouri's drive. He didn't know what to do, what to say. He felt impotent, not feeling he was used to. He'd been simultaneously relieved and infuriated when Sam had phoned. The problem he had is that he didn't know exactly who he was angry at. He didn't think it was Dean, but even so, a part of him wanted to shout, berate, dominate Dean. Punish him for going, ordering him never to go again. He knew that was the soldier, the Marine in him urging him to do these things. To say those things that would only hurt his son. That had been used to hurt and punish him in the past. It was true. These were things he wouldn't have thought twice about saying before, to either of his boys. They were things that he would still say if things had been different. But then, if things had been different, Dean going for a walk wouldn't have had him pacing, sweating, chewing his already bloody nails beyond the quick, would it? He knew what the hunter would do, but was at a loss for what the father should do or say. He hadn't really been a father to Dean since the boy had been old enough to hold a gun, old enough to train, and he was ashamed to admit that Dean had had a gun in his hand by the time his 7th birthday had rolled around. Dean had made moves to learn earlier, desperate to keep his brother safe from the monsters that lived in the dark. It had been Christmas, a whole month before his birthday, that he'd given in. A gun. Not much of a Christmas present, but Dean had beamed at him, overjoyed at the unexpected and much-wanted gift. What kind of father was he? Other than knowing that he fit the criteria biologically, he really didn't think he was much of a father at all. He'd forgotten how to be one over the last 20 years. It was something he desperately needed, wanted, to get back. The last couple of days with both of his boys, with Dean the way he was,
had made him reflect on how he had been with them when they'd both been fit and healthy. He missed he had been as a parent. Mary would be disappointed in him, in the way he'd raised them to be fighters, hunters. Alone, with not even a roof they could call their own. For the briefest of moments, he was grateful that she was gone, that she would never know what his style of parenting had done to her boys. If Mary'd been around, the boys' lives would have been different. He almost laughed at that thought. Of course they would have. If Mary'd been alive, the hunt would never have begun. Could he put the hunt to one side and let her rest in peace? Let the boys live the rest of their lives without constantly having to look over their shoulders? He didn't know the answer to those questions, but he didn't need to find out. Would he be letting her down if he put them, their safety, their happiness, ahead of her memory? He knew, even as it occurred to him, what her response would be. She would always put them first. Always. He took a deep, calming breath as he heard the car door slamming. Sam's muffled voice from behind the locked door. He had to fight his instincts, smile when he wanted to frown. Missouri saved him. She placed her hand on his shoulder, smiled, and then stepped in front of him to usher the boys into the warmth as soon as the door opened. He let out the breath that he didn't even know he'd been holding. Missouri took Dean by the hand and walked him through to the kitchen. She did that so easily, took him by the hand, touched him with affection. Why the hell was it so hard for him to do? Sam hung a few steps back, let his brother go on without him, but not letting him out of his sight. John cocked his head to one side, looking up at his youngest. They exchanged smiles, brief, but start. Sam spoke to him, watching Dean as he sat at one of the chairs around the kitchen table. Missouri could feel the tension subside as she took the bowls from the cupboard. The soup on the stove had been put back on to warm through as soon as Sam had phoned, and she didn't know about the Winchester men, but she was hungry. She felt strange, only for a moment, but strange nevertheless when she first touched Dean's hand. She'd had a fleeting glimpse of... No, she couldn't see it. It was just beyond her reach. A glimmer just beyond the horizon. Dean. What secrets are you keeping, boy? What secrets are you keeping? John looked at the scratches on his son's arms from across that table, trying to gauge exactly what kind of cat had done it. Probably just a normal domestic. Dean wouldn't make eye contact. That was worrying him. He'd done his best not to appear to be angry or upset, but Dean was still acting contrite, acting like the low boy he'd once been after he'd done something he knew his father wouldn't approve of. It hurt. Dean stared at the soup, watched as the steam curled up into the space above the bowl before fading to nothing. The soup smelled and looked good. There's no denying he was hungry after his stomach began to grumble and complain about being ignored for too long. But he didn't enjoy the scrutiny he was under. It robbed him of his desire to try to feed himself, though thankfully a spoon was easier to handle than a knife and a fork. Sam hadn't said anything more to him once they got inside. He just spoke to Dad, quietly, when Missouri had led him to his seat and Sam had held back. They'd been looking at him when they spoke, but nothing had been loud enough for him to hear. His dad had said nothing at all despite the fact that he obviously wanted to, and Missouri had just smiled and placed the soup in front of him.
Looks good.
Missouri raised her eyebrows and laughed. Of course it is, Samuel Winchester. What did you think, I was going to poison you or something? Sam took a mouthful of the soup and smiled at his brother. Dean, it's really good. You should try some. He watched the steam and thought about how good it might be to be able to fade to nothing. He hadn't even noticed that he'd been staring at his bowl, or that his father had been talking to him, until Missouri placed her hand on top of his, forcing him to look up. Her smile was warm, and he felt, for a moment, that she could tell exactly what he was thinking. The gesture was so like the comforting one he had received from someone else earlier this evening that he almost thought. But no, she wouldn't have come here.
Dean, we need to talk to you.
His dad didn't sound angry, but that didn't mean that he wasn't.
Sorry.
The words were spoken quietly, and took a lot of effort to get it out.
No, Dean, you don't have to be. You went for a walk. Maybe we...
John looked around the table, from Sam to Missouri, who was still holding Dean's hand.
Maybe I overreacted, sending Sam out to come find you.
Dean looked across at his father. The small upturn of his smile made Dean realize that he didn't look angry either.
There's a reason we came to get you from Fieldcrest, though, Dean. A reason you can't just take off whenever the mood takes you.
He paused, gauging how best to say this, and then realized that the straightforward approach was probably the way to go.
You're not safe, Dean.
John watched as his son's brow creased. He didn't know how much Dean understood, more than he'd actually given him credit for, probably.
Missouri sensed you were in danger, and we came to get you.
What?
What danger?
Dean nodded.
We don't know exactly. There was a fire at Fieldcrest last night.
John didn't want Dean worried about the victims of the flames.
There wasn't a lot of damage to the building, but the fire started in your room.
Dean watched the bowl in front of him, skin forming on the cooling soup. Fire. He knew about fire. Fire destroyed his dad's life, stole his mom away, took away home and school and childhood. Yes, he knew about fire. He also knew there was more to what his father wanted to say, but he was tired now, so tired. He'd walked because he wanted space, because he'd been called, even though he hadn't gone where she had wanted him to. He wouldn't go anywhere without Sam or Dad in tow. That's what his father wanted him to do. Stay with either him or Sam all of the time. That wasn't so bad. He could do that. Staying with Dad and Sam all the time. He couldn't think of anything he wanted more. While John and Sam washed dishes, Missouri led Dean through to the living room, switching on the old TV that sat at a 90-degree angle to the two comfortably worn sofas that sat opposite each other. To watch anything without getting a crick in his neck, you had to sit with your back against one arm, while your side was against the back of the sofa. This was not ideal if you wanted to watch a lot of TV in this room, but as it was predominantly used as a waiting room for clients who came from Missouri's special talents, it really didn't matter. People who came in here would only sit watching the set for 5-10 minutes at the most, using it as an excuse to be unsociable, silent, so that they didn't have to talk to anyone else who was waiting, didn't have to share the secrets and the worries that they were trying to address by coming to a psychic in the first place. No, it wasn't ideal for watching a lot of TV, but then Missouri never really had been someone who sought escape in the fantasy worlds dreamt up by overpaid TV executives. In her experience, the imaginations of scriptwriters, directors, and actors can never compare to the realities of the world she lived in. She flipped through the channels, nothing on as far as she could see, but Dean seemed quite content when an old episode of what she vaguely recognized as The X-Files came on, one of those cable channels that she wasn't sure why she still paid for.
"Oh, I remember this one," Sam said when he walked into the room and sat on the end of the sofa closest to the TV.
"It's the one where Mulder and Scully pretend to be married while this mud monster tears apart anyone who doesn't mow their front lawn into nice, neat strips." Dean looked up at his brother and smiled. Maybe he had seen this one before. Maybe, but it wasn't something he remembered. Missouri and John joined them, Missouri opposite Sam and John next to her. The TV was soon forgotten as the three began reminiscing and telling tales about the things they had seen and monsters they had either heard or faced personally. Dean enjoyed the company and hardly noticed when the TV was flipped off.
He sat comfortably amongst the smiles, no laughter, as they recalled their own mud monster that had covered them all, Dean included, in the vilest filth imaginable. Dean didn't recall that either, but he nodded and smiled as if he did. His brother and his father, his family, just looked so happy right now that that made Dean happier than he could ever remember being. Dean hardly noticed the smell at first. It kind of crept up on him. But by the time he recognized it, he knew it was already too late to say what was coming. Dad looked his way, smiled. Dean couldn't return it. Dean looked distracted. John wasn't worried, though, not until he noticed that Dean looked slightly panicked, like he wanted to say something, but the words wouldn't come. Not until he saw the rapid blinking which preceded Dean's eyes rolling up into his head. The time the first tremors began in Dean's legs, John was there, calling his name, but knowing all the while that he wouldn't get an answer. "Dean, son, I'm right here. It's all right." Dean's hands were clenched into the tightest fist John had ever seen, nails undoubtedly making crescent-shaped cuts into his palms. "Let's get you more comfortable, okay?" He moved quickly, placing his arms under his son's arms and lifting him off the sofa onto the floor. John wiped at the thin trickle of blood that ran down from the side of Dean's mouth with his thumb. His son's jaw was clenched even more tightly than his fist, and he must have caught his tongue between his teeth. As he grabbed a cushion from the sofa and placed it under Dean's head, Sam cleared the area around him. Missouri lifted the magazines off the table just as Sam lifted it, carrying it well away from his semi-conscious brother, placing it against the wall just as the tremors evolved into a full seizure. Dean was making growling sounds by now, and blood was once again trickling down the side of Dean's chin. John moved off his knees and sat on the floor, waiting helplessly for the seizures to end. How long did these things last for, anyway? A minute? Two? Surely that amount of time had already passed. This couldn't last much longer. Each violent jerk of arm or leg must have strained muscles unused to such contortions, and Dean would ache after this. He made sure that his boy's head remained safely cushioned from the hard floor and continued his vigil. The unmistakable odor of urine greeted him as he noticed the tremors begin to settle, as Dean's treacherous body stilled. John rolled him into the recovery position to wait for him to come around. Missouri lifted her throw off the sofa and settled it over the prone body. "Fucking hell, Sam. One of us has got to make sure he takes his pills." There was no anger in John's words, just a profound sorrow and an unshakable belief that he had once again failed his son.
Innocent, Chapter 9. He wasn't sure exactly what had woken him up, but he allowed sleep to leave him slowly, letting his eyelids flutter and close for a few seconds at a time, while he allowed his consciousness to reemerge. Waking up was a slow process these days. His life didn't depend upon his ability to be awake and alert at a moment's notice. There were no dangers threatening to break in through the door, no knife permanently ensconced beneath his pillow. He could give himself time to stretch, acclimatize, and think. Each time he opened his eyes, he took in a few more details about the room he had spent the night in. The floral drapes at the window, which lay in front of the liberal dusting of salt. The cream-colored walls that were dressed with a variety of prints and old photographs. The tan carpet that had an old oval rug covering the center of it. The untidy cot lying against the length of the wall opposite, butting up against the old oak wardrobe. He wondered which one of them had spent the night with him, keeping watch. The last thing he remembered about last night was sitting on the sofa downstairs, listening to conversations about ghosts and spirits and monsters. They hadn't been scary stories. They'd focused on the good ones, the funny ones, the odd and the even odder. His dad had laughed, so had Sam. And Missouri had asked the questions of someone who believed, but who had never witnessed anything remotely like what they were talking about firsthand. They had included him in the tales, discussing events from his childhood, his teenage years, events from before his accident. He had had better memories of some of them than others, and had poker-faced his way through incidents that they'd wanted his thoughts on.
He had basked in the pleasure that was radiating from his family. Sam had actually laughed so much he had cried, and then it had stopped. He couldn't remember how he got to bed last night, but he knew that it hadn't been under his own steam. The unfamiliar ache, the one that was present in his neck, in his back, as opposed to the familiar one, which pretty much lived down his right side, was testimony to what he suspected had happened last night. He'd had a fit, his first in months. He had a very vague recollection of someone. He thought it was his dad, helping him into the shower and then into bed. Dad doing it would be marginally better than if Sam had had to, and he thought he'd died of embarrassment if it had been Missouri. One thing he knew, though, was that if it was considered necessary for him to have a shower, then he'd... No point in dwelling on it. Couldn't change what had happened. It wouldn't surprise him, though, if Missouri was doing some laundry this morning. Someone was knocking the hell out of the front door. That must have been what had woken him up. Missouri had visitors. Clients, maybe. He ignored the door and closed his eyes, half tempted to go back to sleep. Only half tempted, because he wasn't tired. Sleep was simply an effective way to avoid the trials that the day may bring. Last night, before he got back to the house, before Sammy had picked him up, Mom had said that he needed to talk to his dad. But how could he? How well did Mom even know the man his dad had become? John Winchester wasn't the man he had been when she'd been around. When they danced in the kitchen, Dean held up between them, while Dad had tried to sing. They had chased each other around the garden, armed with wet sponges, while they were supposed to have been washing the car. He couldn't help the lump in his throat, or the smile that spread across his face. Those memories were things that he hadn't thought about for as long as he could remember. He suspected that talking to her had helped him find his way to where his early childhood resided. His recollection of her had never been as clear or as vivid before. Another knock downstairs, he considered the possibility that no one was going to answer. Maybe he was the only person in the house, and he'd have to somersault out of bed, scramble into his clothes, and then sprint down the stairs to get to the door in enough time to answer the insistent knocking, before the new arrivals either gave up or knocked the door down. Yeah, like that would ever happen. He was rescued from his idle thoughts by a muffled sound of Missouri's voice, which was accompanied by that of a man. A couple of moments later, he was certain that his father had joined in with the conversation. John Winchester's voice had an unfortunate quality that, even through floorboards and plaster, sounded angry, even if it wasn't what the man was feeling. He lay there, staring at the ceiling, concentrating on the sound of his father's voice. He knew that he wouldn't be able to do it, but he still tried to make out recognizable words, even syllables, in the bass line that traveled from the entrance hall simultaneously up the stairs and up through the floorboards. He played this game as a kid, very small, listening to his parents' voices in other rooms while he'd lie in bed, reassured by the proof of their existence in his world, rather than by any secrets they shared. John wasn't always the most pleasant of people. He was under absolutely no illusion about that much-mentioned flaw in his character. He knew he could be gruff, abrupt, stubborn, and rude, and he most definitely wasn't always in possession of the patience that was sometimes required to deal effectively with figures of authority. Sometimes it got him into trouble that a calmer man, a more tractable man, could have avoided. In essence, years of limited social interaction had honed an ability to piss off people in less than 30 seconds. He didn't believe that, at this moment in time. He was in a good enough frame of mind to sweet-talk officers from the Lawrence Police Department. It didn't mean he wasn't going to try. He just didn't think he'd be able to hide his general disdain in their presence. His demeanor hadn't been helped by the fact that he'd hardly slept at all last night. It wasn't that Dean had needed him. Once he'd hit the sack, he'd been out cold, the semi-consciousness that he surfaced into after his seizure retreating into total oblivion. But he hadn't wanted to leave him on his own. No, Dean hadn't needed him. But he might have.
It had been that possibility that had kept sleep at bay. It was just like when his boys had been babies. With Dean, Mary had been so tuned in to the possibility that he might need something, that she'd been up and in the nursery before his gentle sighs and gurgles had had the chance to progress into anything like a cry. With Sam, after Mary, it had been Dean that had had that sense, that intuition. John had never been tuned into his kids like that. For him, it had been after he had had his eyes open to the darkness in the world that he'd begun to awake at the slightest sound. Every creak of a motel settling further into its foundations, every whistle of air through vents or gaps in doorways, every clang of decrepit central heating systems and plumbing. In a way, it had been the same thing, the desire to keep his boys safe, that had had him lying awake all night. John could function on a lack of sleep, had had a lot of practice at it. It was not conducive, however, to calm and congenial. He knew he could be a miserable bastard, and he knew that was an accurate description of how he felt right now. And that brought him straight back to them. There they stood, two of them, Laurel and fucking Hardy. The younger of the two, the tall one, wore a badge that said Langtree. He was stood under Missouri's mobile, allowing it to hit him on the head, ducking as if it was annoying him, but not moving out of the way. John sighed. It was cops like this that he really hated, them as fuck, but having this unwavering belief that, because they were in uniform and carried a badge and a gun, they had the right to intimidate and demand. John was a long way from intimidated. This guy looked younger than his boys, too young to be a cop, and John wondered whether nepotism had gotten him into the force, because it sure wasn't mental activity. The other, the older, shorter guy, Nicholas, looked like he could possibly be more reasonable. He looked like he'd be the guy with the most authority, the most experience, the most sense. He looked at it, but he didn't act it. He stood back, away from his partner, and allowed him to do all the talking. When Missouri had opened the door and let them in, she had been softly spoken and polite. After an exchange of only a few words, you could tell that her good humor was strained, that she was silently hoping that they would climb back into the patrol car and go away. She didn't say as much, of course, but John could see the unspoken apology in her face as she turned away, that she hadn't tried to convince them that she was in the house alone. She'd heard them mention the car out front, and then Dean by name. It had immediately grabbed his attention, and okay, he had to admit, it had also put him in a full defensive mode. Once Langtree had spoken to him, John found himself staring at the officer as if will alone could make the asshole spontaneously combust. God, he hated the police. Always guilty until proven innocent. "So, an old black car spot near the scene of a crime and you come here?" He perused his notebook. "Mr. Winchester, we would actually like to discuss this with your son." "I already told you." John gave the fresh-faced novice the best intimidating glare he could muster after spending the night watching over his eldest. "Officer Langtree, Dean won't be able to help you." "We would still like to talk to him if he is here." John looked at the older officer, who seemed quite content to allow his counterpart to piss him off. He stood back, watching, listening, almost as if he was waiting for something. John half wondered if it was the kid's first time out of the station, and this guy was simply acting as babysitter. As this Fung Q, Sang came trotting down the stairs, pulling a hoodie on over his head to cover a t-shirt. As he caught sight of the reception at the bottom of the stairs, he quirked an eyebrow at his dad, who sounded impatient and annoyed when he spoke. "Sam, could you go see if Dean's awake and ask him to come down here?" Without questioning his father, Sam turned on his heel and ran back upstairs. Almost as soon as Sam had gone, John turned back to the police officers who were standing in Missouri's entrance hall. "I don't understand why you need to speak to Dean. We only arrived in Lawrence yesterday. If this thing happened last night and someone saw my car, how'd you know to come here?" Black Chevrolet Impala with Kansas plates was seen by a man jogging towards Dad Perry Park at about the same time as a man was picked up by paramedics in that park. He flipped back a couple of pages in his notebook, giving an impression that his memory was so abysmal that he couldn't remember anything that he had been told that day. We were called to a domestic disturbance three doors down and happened to see your son's car in the drive.
Domestic disturbance, hey? That would be the Sorensons, then, Missouri muttered.
I told Andrew who was pushing it with cheating with Angela. I wonder if it was Camille or Melendra that she found out about.
John glared at Missouri. She smiled politely and retreated back into the kitchen. She could see what kind of mood the man was in. She was just surprised that the police who were standing at the bottom of the stairs didn't seem to appreciate the fact that they lit a fuse, and it wasn't a very long one.
Dean won't be able to help you. It may be registered in his name, but he doesn't drive anymore. He had an accident a few years ago.
John could see that the man in front of him simply wasn't listening.
He would never have hurt someone. He couldn't.
Dan Nicholas hated his job some days. Babysitting the rookie was one of the worst things about being close to retirement. He simply didn't have the sense he was born with. He just couldn't see that the man in front of him was heading towards meltdown, would have probably thumped him already if he hadn't been wearing a uniform. He'd been with the kid for all of 2 days and had come to the unshakable conclusion that Del Langtry was a stupid fuck. He'd almost been assaulted at the Sorensen's house. Bloody hell, that woman had been out for blood, and the husband had managed to hide himself in the bathroom with the phone that he'd summoned them with. Some people were natural with people, had a way about them. This one? Maybe he should just let this Winchester guy have a go, convince the kid that this line of work wasn't for him. He was distracted as the two of them walked down the stairs. The one in front was the guy who'd come down the stairs earlier. Sam, his father had called him. The man coming slowly behind him must be Dean. He could see why his father claimed that the boy couldn't have committed the assault. Dean Winchester was barefoot and dressed in jeans and a t-shirt that didn't quite fit. The shirt actually looked like it belonged to his brother. He walked down the stairs slowly, left hand gripping the handrail, left foot resting on each step in turn until the right caught up with it. Oh yes, he could see why the father believed his son incapable, but... What? The stupid asshole Langtry wasn't even looking. What the hell was so important in that notebook anyway? Dean, these officers would like to ask you a few questions about an assault that happened yesterday. John hoped that he had imagined the panic expression that fleetly skittered across his son's face. If he hadn't, then he hoped that prick with the notebook had been focusing on something else and hadn't caught it. He wasn't too sure about the other guy, who was, at that moment, stepping forward to remove the notebook from his partner's hand. As soon as the police had left, apparently satisfied, John had allowed Dean to seek refuge in the kitchen while he and Sam lingered in the hall.
Well, given that low performance, they had to accept that Dean had nothing to do with what happened.
He looked directly at his son.
What do you think?
Sam looked at his father, who was sitting on the wooden chair that backed onto the staircase. He looked tired, and there was concern there. His father had something on his mind, and it wasn't the smell of bacon and coffee that was reaching him from the kitchen.
Just before I found Dean at the park, I heard something.
There was a scream. Dean, when I saw him, he looked distracted. Not scared, but...
I just don't know, Dad.
John let his head fall backwards, and he breathed out an audible sigh.
So he knows something about what happened.
Yeah, I think so.
Then we're going to have to talk to him.
As he rose, he added, and he's going to have to talk to us. He didn't add that there'd be no getting away with the act that he'd given to the police. Dean had allowed the police to make the assumption that his brain was as unreliable as his body, had played into it. John would have been proud of his boy if it hadn't made him realize that he was keeping secrets, and some pretty major ones at that. In the end, they'd left and hadn't even suggested that they stay in town. They were officially crossing the name Winchester off the name of suspects. Though no one had spoken to the victim yet, and their dismissal of Dean was a suspect, may suddenly change if the victim was able to ID Dean as being, well, at least present. Missouri had said she was unaware of the lies.
Right.
At that moment, he doubted that Dean was unaware of anything. That maybe Dean, for all the difficulties he was having, for all the changes that injury had wrought on his body, was the same Dean who would lie, cheat, steal, and con if he had to. Yes. Dean had conned those police officers into feeling sympathy for him. No, not sympathy. It was worse than that. He had made them pity him. Pity. He hadn't faked the stumbling over his words. He hadn't faked the hesitant movements. But he had faked the look of confusion. Dean had been confused at all. Missouri could feel the determination coming from John. She had expected something like this at some point, just hadn't thought it would be so soon. She looked out the window to see Dean sitting on the bench in her backyard, allowing the sun to shine on his face. "Don't give that boy too hot a time, John." John didn't say anything to her, simply walked right past her, out her back door, and into her garden. Sam held back, pensive. He didn't want his dad to have a go at Dean, but he'd noticed it too. Dean was keeping secrets. How the hell were they expected to keep Dean safe if he was determined to keep things from them? The Innocent, Chapter 10. Missouri had purple roses growing up and along the dividing fence between her house and the house next door. Some blooms, past their best, were clinging onto the plant, refusing to submit to the inevitability of their fate. Missouri was not interested in tending any plants in the garden that were not of practical use. The roses had somehow survived, despite this deliberate neglect. The last few days had been unseasonably cool, the nights even cooler, and that break from the blistering sun had been the only thing that had allowed the drooping flowers to last this long. The reprieve was over. They would not be there this time next week. The bench Dean sat on was positioned in such a way that no one could walk behind him unless they wanted a close encounter with the thorns of the flowers accompanied. He leant back, allowing the rays of the sun to warm him, to shine on his face and provoke the freckles, which were still waiting under the surface, to emerge from their winter hibernation. The scent of apple hung heavy in the air, and he inhaled it, letting it fill his lungs as he took deep, calming breaths. He allowed his eyes to drift closed and willed himself to relax even though he knew what was coming. Dad was angry. He didn't need Missouri's talents to see that. His father had watched him when those police officers had been there, and he had known. He had just known that Dean was hiding something, keeping secrets, lying. He had never been able to withhold the truth from his father, at least not without the guilt that accompanied the lie giving him away. His conscience would never let a lie to his father go unchecked, but he hadn't been lying to his dad. He hadn't. But he doubted his dad would see it that way. John Winchester had an inbuilt lie detector when it came to his kids. It had meant that he'd rarely uttered an untruth to the man, at least not unless the repercussions of any revelation would be vastly more destructive than a truth. He moved his feet in the grass, allowing the individual blades to tickle the soles of them.
"You shouldn't be out here without shoes."
His father's voice maintained an air of neutrality. Dean wasn't fooled. He knew there was more coming, and he waited for it. A brief silence, and then the interrogation began.
"You were at that park last night."
A statement of fact, not a question.
"Did you see anything?"
"Anything." Well, he'd seen a cat. Dad wouldn't be interested in that. He'd seen a girl, a guy. Dad may be interested. His mom, he was not going to mention her, no matter what his father said. So he'd definitely seen something, but that wasn't what his dad was asking. He was referring to that attack on the man who'd been standing behind him, the attack that happened in the dark, that he only saw inside his head through eyes that weren't his own. He hadn't seen him suspended by his throat by invisible hands. He hadn't seen the arm being snapped so that the useless hand was forced to drop the blade that had been meant to spill his blood. He hadn't seen it. He hadn't. Not really. Not with his own eyes.
it couldn't count that the vision had been borrowed. It wouldn't be lying to say, "No, I didn't see anything." But it would feel like lying. He knew the guilt was already gearing itself up to rise to the surface, to whisper into his ear that he was letting his father down, again. That he was a disappointment, again. Just like whenever he'd managed to get himself suspended from school, when he'd let Sammy get hurt, or when he'd been hurt. He had seen the man lying broken on the ground. He'd heard the screams, the desperate gasps for air around the crushed windpipe, the groans of agony as he'd been dropped unceremoniously in a heap. John watched his son's face, approaching cautiously. Even with his head bowed, John could tell that Dean didn't open his eyes at all. It shouldn't be so easy to get so close to him without him at least opening his eyes. It shouldn't, but it was. He didn't want to make this conversation any harder than he knew it was going to be. He was fully aware that he was intentionally backing Dean into a corner. He was not going to give him the opportunity to avoid this. He wanted answers. He needed them. When Dean raised his eyes to him, drawing them slowly up from the view of his feet on lawn, John knew he was ready, willing to talk even if he'd rather not. As John moved within a couple of feet of the bench, another thought struck him. He'd talk. But would he be saying something that John actually wanted to hear? Sam leant across the sink, hand pressed onto the glass, angling his body so that he could have a view of the confrontation taking place outside. He felt the water seep through his clothes from the drainer, but ignored it. He didn't know exactly why he was worried. Dad would not be a complete asshole about this. He was 90% certain of that fact. Okay. There was that underlying 10% of doubt, built on the sturdy foundation of a lifetime's experience as John Winchester's son. But that last couple of days, the way Dad had been with Dean, he wouldn't be an asshole. He wouldn't. At least, he'd better fucking not be. Dean glanced up at his father, wishing silently that he'd sit down, but knowing that he wouldn't. John Winchester had always taken advantage of his height. There was something about looking down on someone that gave an impression of power, authority, and dominance. It'd been very imposing when he'd been a kid. Probably didn't work with Sammy anymore.
Last night, when Sam found you, were coming out of the park, weren't you?
Dean bowed his head, not wanting to look up and see the expression on his father's face when he nodded.
Did you see that man attacked?
A noticeable hesitation. The moment of truth. Dean shook his head. No, he hadn't witnessed anything with his own eyes. He wasn't lying. He wasn't.
You're saying you didn't see anything?
Dean shook his head again, this time with no hesitation at all.
Dean.
The voice was cold, anger wrestling with frustration.
Tell me. Don't shake your head. Say the words, damn it.
The last few words were spat out between clenched teeth. The father in him was retreating, and John was finding it hard to bring him back.
No, didn't see.
John couldn't do this. He couldn't not look at his son when he spoke, not see his face. Most of Dean's ability to communicate now was nonverbal, and this just wasn't working. He bent at the knees, hunkering down in front of the seated man.
You didn't.
He took in a breath and held it. He knew he was losing his temper, and this wasn't going to work if he got angry with Dean. He didn't want to be angry with him. He didn't, but he also wasn't prepared to put up with Dean lying to him. And Dean was most definitely lying. He always knew when he was. He placed a hand on his son's leg and watched it silently as Dean attempted to catch a blade of grass between his toes, focused on it, determined. The sigh that followed was anything but quiet. He peered at Dean's face to catch the bottom lip caught between teeth. Dean was lying. He wasn't paying attention to him. He wanted to shout, get angry, show frustration, but he fought so hard to rein in the impulse. Even when he was a kid, Dean used to be able to lie, was a master craftsman when it came to spinning a yarn, working the con, getting something from witnesses, journalists, victims, anyone. But he almost always tripped himself up when the lie was directed at his dad. He knew that he could never get away with lying to his dad. Never. John always found him out. Well, almost always. When he was young, it had been the little tells, the averted look, the furtive glance, the gnawed lip. The guilt that had Dean trying to make amends for days afterwards, and the misery that accompanied it. By the time he was a teenager, he'd become much better at it, more selective in what he kept from his father. He'd rarely lied to keep himself out of trouble. No, it had always been about protecting Sam, keeping Sam from the punishment that he took upon himself, taking the blame when none was his. They were harder lies to spot, more difficult untruths to detect, but he'd learned to see the signs then, too. Okay, so he hadn't detected every single deceit. He wasn't delusional enough to think that his son couldn't keep any secrets from him. There was a chance that he'd missed the sighs of relief, the withheld intelligence, the conspiratorial wink between siblings, but he reckoned he was running at least 80% with Dean. With Sam, he'd be lucky if he hit the 50% mark. For some reason, Sam had always been more successful at keeping things from him. Dean was lying now, as if he was all of 7 years old again, concealing the guilt by hiding his eyes. He gently squeezed the knee that his hand rested on.
"You were in the park?"
Dean nodded.
Yes. "Did you hear the scream that Sam heard?"
It was more than a hesitation, much more. So now he knew which way Dean was playing it. He wasn't so much lying as being selective with his interpretation of the question. It was kind of like a djinn who granted a poor smuck wishes with a literal interpretation of the request. The words he used were important. How was Dean supposed to know what scream Sam had heard? He repeated the last question.
"Dean, you heard a scream?"
A nod. That would do. For now.
"Did you see the man who was attacked?"
Dean's feet stopped moving. He looked up, and then attempted to get up from the bench. John had already decided that that was not going to happen, putting a little more pressure onto the hand that sat on Dean's good leg.
"You're not going anywhere, Dean. Not until you tell me what I want to know."
John didn't miss the flash of fear that crossed his son's face. Fear and something else. John almost faltered, almost let him go. He hated the idea that Dean was scared of him, loathed it. But he had to do this. He had to know what was going on. If what Dean knew was linked to the danger Missouri had predicted, well, it was too important to let go. Dean's safety was too important. John didn't miss Dean's furtive glance to the other side of the garden, to the area shaded by an old willow tree. He followed Dean's gaze, half expecting to see Missouri or Sam. There was no one there. John waited until he had Dean's full attention, lifting his chin so that he had to look him in the eye.
"Did you see him? The man?"
A small nod, another glance towards the shadows beneath the tree.
"Dean, look at me."
He knew he was shouting now, patience lost.
"Did you see him get hurt?"
"No."
"Did you see what hurt him?"
Another glance. Dean was looking panicked now, his breathing getting heavier, faster.
"Dean, focus on me. Did you see?"
A nod.
"What was?"
John didn't actually know what had hit him. He went from kneeling in front of his son to lying on the ground next to the bench, Dean leaning over him, attempting to shield him from something he couldn't see. The Innocent, Chapter 11. Now, if it was ever mentioned to him later, he would never admit to panicking.
but in his haste to get outside, Sam lost his balance and slipped into the sink. He felt the denim cling to his skin and tug at the hairs on his legs, even as he scrambled to the door and out into the garden. It hadn't happened so quickly. He'd noticed Dean's agitation, but he hadn't expected. Shit. What the hell was that? He hadn't seen anything. Whatever had happened, the only person who had been aware of it had been his brother. Dean had moved quicker than he'd seen him move in a very long time, literally falling on top of their father, covering as much of John Winchester's body as he could. By the time he got to them, Dean was carefully lifting himself off the ground, his dad helping.
"Is it gone?"
Dean shook his head. It wasn't. It just wasn't close enough to be an immediate threat. That was just something he knew, even if he had no evidence to back it up. For some reason, light was too bright to see it by. Moonlight was good. Lightning worked too, as did firelight. But in sunlight, it was virtually invisible. Besides, it always found a way to be hidden if it wanted to be. It liked the shadows. John felt the blood trickling down the side of his head, not from the impact with whatever it was that had knocked him down, but from the stone that had been lying unseen in the grass. Sam took a gentle hold of his brother's arm, but addressed his father.
"Did you see it?"
John shook his head. "No." He looked around the garden, but saw what he was expecting to see. Absolutely nothing.
"Where is it?"
Dean shook his head.
"Don't know."
John was not going to accuse his son of lying. Not now. He'd much rather continue this conversation indoors. As he turned back towards the house, he saw Missouri, staring at the far end of her garden, frowning.
"Do you see it?"
"I don't know what it is, John Winchester, but no, I can't see it." "Can't feel it, though, and you're Nod's favorite person." John smiled as he wiped at the blood. Everyone's a fucking critic. "Come on in the house. I don't think it likes the idea of being cooped up inside. Not that it won't follow, just that it would prefer not to." That was all the encouragement John needed, and he ushered Sam and Dean into the house. Dean didn't argue, didn't complain. He hadn't seen it coming, just felt it. He'd known what it was going to do as soon as his father had touched him. It had made no difference that the touch hadn't been violent or threatening, though perhaps it could have appeared that way to an observer. He had sensed Dean's unease and had misinterpreted it. He hadn't been scared of his father. He'd been scared for him. There was a difference, but he hadn't been able to see it. Fear was fear. The only thing that had stopped his father from getting hurt worse was that Dean had put himself in between them. To hurt his dad, it would have had to hurt him. He had no interest in doing that. Never had. Missouri stood in the water that pooled in front of her sink. Not much but enough to antagonize her sensibilities. A wet floor was dangerous, and she didn't invite danger into her life. There was more than enough around that took it upon itself to invite itself in. John sat at Missouri's kitchen table while Missouri handed Sam the first aid kit that she kept in the cupboard beneath her sink. "You clean up your daddy's face and then clean up this mess you made on my floor." Sam didn't argue. She was not the type of woman you argued with, if you knew what was good for you. During a disagreement a couple of years ago, she actually hit him across the back of his head with one of her wooden mixing spoons. It hadn't really hurt. It had been more of a tap, but it had been embarrassing to be treated like he was a little kid, a blow to his pride. His dad had laughed, and Dean, well, he would have never let him live it down if he'd been around. Who in the hell chose to use a spoon as a weapon anyway? He wasn't going to invite that kind of treatment from her again. There was already a bowl of warm water, tinged pink, sitting in the middle of the table. Dean stared at it, at his father's blood. Now that it was cleaned up, you could see that the cut was about an inch long, just above his right eyebrow, blood pooling at the lowest point of the wound before attempting to continue its path down and around the contours of John's face, around the eyebrow itself and then staining the skin before being trapped in the hair that framed his face.
Sorry.
Don't sorry me, Dean. Just talk to me. Was that thing outside what hurt the man in the park last night? Dean nodded. Sam put pressure on the cut, attempting to get the flow to stop. John hardly noticed.
Were you there?
Dean didn't deny it. A thought occurred to him then, one that would never have entered his head if his son had not become the man sitting in front of him.
Dean, that man, did he hurt you?
No.
Was he going to?
He had a knife. John quickly put two and two together. It, whatever the hell it was, protected his son. That was what it did. It hadn't meant any harm, at least not to Dean. He still wanted it gone, but a not-so-small part of him was grateful to it. A nagging voice whispered in his ear that had obviously seen his treatment of Dean outside as threatening. He couldn't deny it. It had been. He was not going to apologize for it. Sometimes, to get your kids to do what you wanted them to, you had to exert your authority over them. Sometimes that could be threatening. Simple fact. Sam reached back into the first aid kit and spoke.
He was going to hurt you?
Anger poured out every syllable as the voice worked its way from between gritted teeth. Admitting it was admitting that he wasn't who he used to be. It was admitting that he was no longer able to protect himself from some random guy with a knife, which in turn meant that he was no longer able to protect Sam. He was pretty useless as a big brother. Useless. And there was that word again, cropping up whenever it felt like to taunt him. Useless, useless, useless. Sam took his silence as affirmation, and muttered something about going to the hospital and finishing the guy off. No one goes for his brother with a knife. Not and get off so lightly. He finished putting the paper stitches over his father's cut, which was deep, but not deep enough to warrant anything more. He put the first aid kit back in the cupboard and was not surprised to have Missouri foist a floor cloth into his face when he turned around. He took it.
Dean, how long has this thing been following you around?
Dean shook his head. He didn't know. He thought he'd seen it at the hospital. But everything was hazy about that time. He could have imagined it. Brain swollen, senses unreliable, drugs and sedatives both being a constant in his life then. It had been with him at Fieldcrest. He was certain about that. Though, when it had first appeared to him, he didn't really have a clue. His memory was just so unreliable. While? John considered something then. The entity at the motel. He hadn't seen it since they'd left there, and he'd assumed that whatever it was rooted to that place, a spirit haunting that location. Now he had to accept that there was the very real possibility that the spirit was haunting Dean. It happens sometimes. A spirit not linked to a place, but to a person. Whatever it was, though, it wasn't the danger threatening Dean's safety. It was instead something with a keen desire to protect him. The possibility occurred to John in that instant. A supernatural entity might know things that weren't useful. He turned to Missouri.
If it's a spirit, couldn't you talk to it?
She turned from her supervision of Sam cleaning her floor to look at John. When spirits talk to me, they do so because they want to, not because I force them into it.
Well, could you try?
I can, but I can't guarantee anything. John nodded and turned to Dean.
You need to have something to eat, and then you need to take your pills.
Dean nodded. No real point in doing anything else. The heavy drapes were already closed, creating a visual barrier between this room and the world outside, but only the illusion of protection from it. There were countless dangers out there, but only one that he was interested in at the moment. Even the demon that had killed Mary was a secondary consideration, and he never thought he would ever believe that. John lit the third of the beeswax candles that had been arranged on the bronze plate in the center of the old oak table. Next to them, he already placed a bowl of soup and a loaf of fresh baked bread. Missouri claimed that the dead sometimes sought the nourishment that they required during their lives, and so it had to be available for whoever showed up. John shook his head. He hadn't wanted to contradict her, but in his experience, the dead rarely needed coaxing or encouragement
to put in an appearance if it suited their purpose. He had agreed to play according to Missouri's rules tonight. She'd agreed to do the seance, but had made certain stipulations. John had been entirely happy about them, but he conceded. The attendees at a seance were generally presented in multiples of three. That would have been him, her, and Sam, but she had insisted that Dean attend. John hadn't argued, despite how he felt about the idea. After breakfast, Sam had decided to take Dean out, give him a distraction. He'd asked John to go too, but John had known that what Sam had really wanted was the opportunity to spend time alone with his brother, to get to know him again, and so he had declined the invitation. After checking the paper in Missouri's local knowledge, Sam had created an itinerary that had included both museums and galleries. The touristy stuff, Sam had called it. Sam had tried to interest him in Lawrence's historical past. Dean had proved that he hadn't changed in yet another way. He hadn't been interested. Dean hadn't said much, but Sam had been able to read the lack of enthusiasm in his expression, as Sam had talked about how they were going to fill their day. Instead of the cultural day that Sam had planned, they ended up downtown, spending hours walking along Massachusetts. Dean dragging them both from one shop to the next, and Sam indulging his every whim. In one shop that had stocked imported foods from the UK, he had encouraged Sam to part with some cash for a sack of shortbread and chocolate bars. Dean had been happily grazing on that stuff all day, and there was very little of it left. Missouri had tutted, but Sam had been more than happy to pander to his brother. The food wasn't the only thing Sam had bought him. It was reminiscent of them more than 15 years ago, only then the desire to spoil had flowed in the opposite direction. John's day had been relatively uneventful, well, after that incident in the garden. He had been able to ignore the headache, finding it little more than an annoyance. It wasn't as if he had not suffered much worse. He'd watched some TV, he'd read a couple of magazine articles, he'd paced, he'd made coffee, lots of coffee, and he hated every second. He didn't like being inactive, especially when he knew that there was trouble brewing. It had been about an hour after Sam and Dean had left that his phone had begun to ring, and he'd been so happy for the distraction that he hadn't even bothered to check the caller ID before answering. Expecting Jim Murphy, he'd been surprised to hear Jack Miles calling him about a vampire nest in Iowa. The familiar rush of adrenaline coursed through him at the possibility of a hunt. It had been an automatic response, subconscious desire calling him. Not too far. Could probably get up there today. A day or two to deal with the nest, and then back here. 3 days. 4, tops. It was the first time he could ever recall turning down a hunt when he wasn't already in the midst of one. He didn't know what kind of time frame he was working on at the moment. Missouri couldn't enlighten him. What was coming after Dean could turn up a year from now. Next week. Tonight, even. As soon as the words had left Jack's mouth, John had said no. He didn't know who had been more stunned. Maybe this was progress. Maybe in the future he could put his boys first, make being a father his priority. He gave Jack a few names of the hunters he knew who might be willing to help him with his vamp problem, and then hung up. He hadn't put his phone down after speaking to Jack. Instead, he dialed Jim's number. Jim had sounded grave when he answered, insisting that he just tried to call him and had found the number busy. He hadn't left a message. He was going to call him back, but John had beaten him to it. That was when he found out about the incident at the motel. The 32-year-old trucker had apparently had a heart attack at the wheel and driven off the interstate, through the car park, into the building. The only casualty was the trucker himself, who'd been pulled dead from the cab after he demolished 3 rooms. It was possible that it was an accident, a coincidence that didn't really concern them. Yeah, and politicians never did anything for personal gain. How often did 32-year-olds have heart attacks anyway? He knew it happened, but not that often. It was no great surprise that the room they'd stayed in had been one of the 3 demolished. Jim had agreed with him. Something was following them, and it was getting closer. Dean sat in Missouri's kitchen, nursing a glass of milk,
watching as the condensation dribbled down the side of the glass and made a perfect ring around its base. He was tired, and he was alone. He'd done a lot of walking today. It had been nice to have Sam with him. They chatted about things other than what had happened this morning, about things that he remembered enough about to have something to say on each subject. Not that he'd had the opportunity to say much. His little brother could talk a hind leg off a donkey if he was of mind to. Didn't matter if they were discussing music or the best fast food chain, Sam had something to say. Keeping up with Sam hadn't been easy. That dude had mega long legs. But Sam had adapted his stride to suit Dean, and Dean had known their frequent stops at coffee shops and diners hadn't really been because his brother had been thirsty. It was funny, though. Dean only had to mention that he'd like something, and Sam offered to buy it. It would have been so easy to take advantage, but he'd held himself back. And then he'd tried that shortbread stuff, the last empty package of which now safe and secure in the trash. He wondered whether Sam would go and get him some more tomorrow, if he asked. A small part of him was dismayed at Sam's eagerness to please. He was pretty sure that he hadn't been like this before. He took a sip of the milk, not quite as cold as it had been, but that was his own fault for holding the glass for so long. It was getting dark outside. His dad was in a little room next to the dining room, where Missouri usually saw her clients. He didn't know where his brother and Missouri were. They were no doubt all doing something to prepare for this seance. He remembered what a seance was, but was unsure whether he'd ever attended one before. He knew his dad wasn't too happy about him being there. He'd overheard him and Missouri discussing it. He wasn't sure why his dad was so concerned. Sam had said it was because Dad didn't want him worried or upset. A seance involved talking to the dead talking back. Dean couldn't imagine him being worried and upset about that, not unless the dead who spoke were unpleasant. They were sometimes. When they were, like the old guy that had died up at Fieldcrest last summer, he simply refused to talk back.
The Innocent, Chapter 12. The candles flickered briefly, violently resisting the shifting air that was stirred up as Sam closed the door. He was the last to arrive, and he quickly settled into the empty seat between Dean and Missouri, opposite his impatient father. It had been a while since he'd last attended a genuine seance, though he had been there for a couple of bogus ones, investigating various spurious claims of mediumship that were interfering with the investigation. He'd been known to perform one or two himself when the need arose, but this was different. You had to have a special gift for the dead to seek you out to converse with you, a very special gift. Part of it was the ability to listen. Part of it was being open and amenable to the whims of the deceased. The dead didn't just communicate with anyone. Admittedly, they weren't too choosy about who they desired to kill or maim, but they were usually very reticent to give you anything of themselves. Very. The dearly departed liked to keep secrets. It was all, "I'm more than happy to rip your head off, but I won't introduce myself first." Seances were like fingerprints. They were all different. Each medium had techniques that worked for them. Some had spirit guides that performed the introductions. Others spoke to the chosen spirit directly. Sometimes the spirit sought the medium out. As others, they deliberately deflected the unwanted attention and had to be cajoled. No matter what techniques the medium had in their repertoire every now and then, they would be forced to add another. The spirits drove the sessions, led them where they wanted them to go. Those that sought commune with the dead had to adapt rapidly to cater for the whim or contrariness of those they sought, to varied degrees of success. Missouri was one of the few that he had ever met that possessed a genuine gift. She rarely needed to go through the rigmarole of particular rituals. The dead would come if they chose to, but she could put on a show for people who expected it. Even for someone who could successfully communicate with the dead, Missouri didn't always get a response. She couldn't summon them from the ether. They had to be nearby and receptive. Sometimes they would tag along with whoever had come for assistance and advice. Less often, they would turn up unexpectedly of their own accord. Missouri would sense their presence. They radiated motion. Words spoken in their company frequently did no more than provoke what she could feel. Ill will or good, joy or sorrow, love or hatred. Not all forms of communication were verbal. They didn't always speak. This was important. Answers were needed, and Missouri needed more of a response than the occasional mood swing. For this reason, she had spent the day preparing herself for one of the more traditional ways to hold court with the dead. With only the candle lit in the room, the atmosphere was definitely conducive to summoning the dead. It was just like a horror movie set. Heavy drapes blocking out the outside world, high back chairs arranged around the circular table, ruby-red cloth hanging over the table, falling almost to the floor, and in the center, the only source of light, the candle. Oh, and what was left of Missouri soup.
Well, let's get this show on the road.
His dad sounded anxious to begin. Probably was. He was surprised he'd allowed the delay at all after what had happened this morning. Sam felt Dean inch his hand slowly towards his, sliding it awkwardly across the tabletop. Aware that this was Dean's bad hand, he took hold of it gently, brushing his thumb over the back of it to reassure him. Missouri spoke calmly, quietly. Her voice filled the room. "I am talking to the spirit that has attached itself to Dean Winchester. I ask you to come forward and reveal yourself." Though the candles flickered, Sam didn't see anything, but he was aware of a subtle change in the way Missouri was breathing, coming slightly faster now. "I know you're here. We don't mean you any harm, but we'd like to ask you a few questions." The candles shimmered once again, growing to twice their height before receding back to their original form. Shadows cast themselves on the walls and furniture, making the common place appear anything but. That was when Sam saw it, or at least he thought he did. It flickered in the far corner about 2 feet from the ground. As the candlelight surged into the room again, it vanished, only to reappear a moment later behind Dean. His dad had noticed it, too. Dean bowed his head slightly, as if keeping it upright was too much for him to accomplish. When he looked across to his brother, Sam could see that Dean was aware of something, even though he hadn't turned to see what was now, almost certainly, within only a couple of inches of the back of his chair. He didn't appear afraid, just worried. The impression was confirmed as Dean's lower lip edged between his teeth, and then Dean's eyes fell closed as his brow furrowed.
"What's going on?"
Missouri didn't respond to his dad's question. When she spoke, it was to the person sitting opposite her, the only person in the room that she wasn't touching. "Is he talking to you?" Dean didn't open his eyes, though. Sam felt his brother's hold on his hand tighten slightly. The candle began burning fiercely, attempting to live out the rest of its life within the next few moments, wax already pooling on the cloth.
"Missouri?"
His dad looked worried, but he knew better than to release Dean's hand and break the circle. Missouri looked confused.
"We're not alone, John.
There are more prisons here than I anticipated, but they're not interested in me. They're here for Dean. Only for Dean." Dean's eyes opened, and he rested his gaze on his father.
"Don't worry."
"Who are they?" Confusion crossed Dean's face.
"They?"
Missouri leaned forward slightly. "Dean, honey, there's more than one spirit here. Many more."
"Oh. The dead must be freaking stalking me."
Humor was injected into Dean's voice, but his brother didn't look happy. Not at all.
"Dean."
It was almost a hiss that escaped his father's mouth. John had no time for Dean's sense of humor. It was possible, after all, that Dean's words were true. The dead were stalking him, and along with them something else. Something much more dangerous than the spirit. Sam had to admit, though, that he was more than just a little thrilled to have a glimpse of his big brother, Snark. Dean's brow furrowed and his head tilted to one side, his ear pressing against his shoulder, Even through the grimace, he was aware enough to keep the circle intact.
Sorry. Shouting.
Pain existed in every word. Before his dad could say anything, Missouri broke in.
Who's shouting, sweetheart?
Dean opened his mouth, though no sound came out. He looked across at Missouri, pleading. He wanted to speak, needed to, but the words were caught, stuck where he couldn't reach them.
Oh.
It was a quiet sound. A surprised one. Missouri's eyes glazed over slightly as tears began to slip unceremoniously down her face.
It's all right, Dean. I'll talk for you.
That's a mighty powerful gift that boy has. He doesn't even know it. There were so many scrambling to be heard, so many forcing their way into her head. Too many voices, each laying over the next. There was desperation, and Dean had been unable to decipher the message, could not pick out the one from the many.
John, Sam, the spirit with Dean, the one from the garden, is sorry. It didn't mean to hurt you, but it sensed that Dean was scared, and didn't want anything to happen to him.
Does it know about the danger Dean's facing?
She listened carefully, trying to pick out the one amongst the cries of others. The whispers, shouts, screams. Some were coming from a great distance. Some were much closer. She looked at Dean's pale but placid face. He had to be hearing it, too, but it was not something that showed on his face.
They all know. The ones that speak to Dean. I don't think you always listen, do you?
She smiled at the man in front of her, even as he glanced away. The look that passed his face, as he stared beyond her to the closed doorway, was relief. A brief smile escaped before he reined it in. Maybe he does listen to some of them. She felt their emotions now, waves of them buffeting her. Anger, regret, guilt, fear, concern, hatred. And somewhere in the mix, love, all-consuming and without limits.
I'm getting a name, but I... Marlowe.
Sam's brow creased. He knew that name. Marlowe. It was at the Marlowe house where Dean had his accident, where Dean had saved him from whatever had lurked in the darkness. He noticed that his dad had recognized the name, too.
We laid Jackson Marlowe to rest.
Not him.
The dad.
Jefferson Marlowe.
Sam looked across the table at his father. After Dean had been taken to the hospital, neither of them had completed the hunt. They'd gone back only to dispose of Jackson's body, neither wanting to spend too much time away from the ICU where Dean lay. John fought to hold his tongue, rein in what his instincts demanded. Jefferson Marlowe. That bastard had murdered his own son, and... Had Marlowe been responsible for what happened to Dean? Was Dean being haunted by the thing that had done this to him? One second, Dean had been calling a warning to his brother. The next, he was out cold on the floor, blood rapidly pooling around his head. There had been no clue as to what had hit him. No broken mansory, clasped beam, nothing. There had been no time to search, and he had to admit that he wasn't in the right frame of mind to think about it later. Days later, when he'd finally risked a break from the hospital, from Dean's bedside. It had been a risk, too. He already needed resuscitating twice since he'd come out of surgery, and John really hadn't been certain. He really hadn't known then that he wasn't going to lose him. For 4 years, he hadn't always allowed himself to think of the way Dean had needed resuscitating on the floor of that house. Of Sam's scream when he realized Dean had stopped breathing, of the race to the hospital while he prayed that the police would pull them over so that he could let them take the responsibility of getting his boy to the ER away from him, so that he could just go and sit with his son, hold him, if he was destined to lose him. Dean could have died. Had died. Was Marlowe responsible? Had he... Missouri tightened her grip on John's hand, waiting for his attention to come back to her. They had things they had to talk about,
not to mention a room full of dead people.
She was here, and she was making them stay quiet, making them shut up so that he could think. Jefferson Marlowe, he knew the name. At least, he thought he did.
You know it, baby.
I do? He quickly glanced towards Missouri. She was just looking at him. He didn't think that she heard. His mother smiled at him.
She knows that there's someone here talking to you, but she doesn't know who. That can be your secret, for now.
Dean didn't want to lose sight of her as she glided gracefully around the room, but to follow her, even with his eyes, would draw attention to the fact that he wasn't really listening to the others talk about, well, whatever they were talking about. He'd kind of lost track. His father was almost shouting at Sam. Sam wasn't rising to the bait. Missouri was trying to hush them both. He was like a moth, drawn to the flame that would singe his wings and render him motionless. He had to watch her. Had to. Your daddy has a little gray in his beard. Have you noticed?
Mary inspected John's beard closely, looking up to smile at Dean before returning to the object of her attention. She'd smiled serenely against the backdrop of his father's livid face. She whispered to the face before her, raising an almost transparent hand to ghost over her husband's mouth.
What a temper you have, baby. Never outgrew that fire streak, did you? Her eyes glowed when she looked back at him.
I never let your daddy grow a beard. Well, not after we got married. He wanted to, but I told him it just made him look like he was too lazy to shave.
Dean giggled. He couldn't help it. All eyes were on him, concern in the eyes of everyone sitting around the table, merriment in his mother's.
You all right?
Dean responded to his brother's query with barely a nod, and then the trio before him were once again lost in conversation, only Missouri taking more than a moment to look at him, into him, as if she was looking for something and found it in the very first place she looked.
Careful, baby. You keep looking like that, then someone's going to guess that you're not paying any attention to what they're saying.
Now where was I? Oh yeah, your daddy. You may not remember him the way he was, Dean, but he always loved you. Wanted so much for you. Do you know he started a college fund for you way back when we first found out we were expecting?
One for Sammy, too.
He had hopes, baby.
This isn't the life he would have wanted for you.
I know. Her smile had disappeared now, replaced by the sorrow that he had seen at the park.
You and Sammy were our joy.
She walked around the table, avoiding getting too close to Missouri, lest she sense something, and settled next to his brother.
Your baby brother grew up, didn't he?
He's bigger than me. Dean watched a tear slide down her face before she came to him once more.
I can't stay for long, honey. I can't be away from the house for too long. Do you know you're like a beacon for us? We can't resist you. You need to tell your daddy everything. I'm not joking, baby. The one that's coming for you, you draw him too. I don't know why he stayed away before, but he's coming now, and you need to tell your daddy everything.
Everything, Dean. And then
tell him this.
Dean listened to every word she said, every instruction.
The Innocent, Chapter 13.
The room was shrouded in darkness, the candles struggling to deliver the last of their luminance as the wick greedily consumed what was left of the wax. Feeling the strong grip on both of his hands, Dean half wondered whether someone would break the circle to switch the light on when they eventually died. Some people are scared of the dark. He never was. Not really. Even after he knew exactly what was there in the absence of light, hiding, waiting. The things that were there in the dark were there in the light, too. At least in the dark, you got the chance to hide. In the light, there was no hiding place. Raised voices, arguing over something. Probably him. He was trying his hardest to ignore it. Too many other things vying for his attention.
He could give them their answers now. He didn't want to, but he could. They just needed to ask him. They needed to ask him and actually listen to what he had to say. Listen and act on it. Trust his judgment. But perhaps that was asking too much. His dad had never deferred to him, had never allowed him to win an argument. Not that Dean had ever really argued with him. Good training, Sammy had called it, though it hadn't been meant kindly. From the way Sam was shouting back at his dad, the training still hadn't stuck with him. What was wrong with not wanting to fight? She was still here. He was grateful that she hadn't left him yet, though she would soon. She'd spoken to him, told him everything she knew, which was far more than he was aware of. Then she spoke of them, the others, the ones that found themselves drawn to him. Part of that was Jefferson Marlowe's fault, but only part. Marlowe's persistent attendance on him gave the others a signal that he was approachable now, even when he wasn't listening. Apparently in the time before the accident that had robbed his father of the son he had once had, they had known that he was to be avoided. Even if they had been attracted to his presence, his role as a hunter was enough of a repellent to dissuade all but the most self-obsessed spirits. Now he wasn't a hunter. Now he was less of a threat. Now they came to him with things other than death, bloodshed, and mayhem in mind. Mom had said that he'd always attracted the dead, an idea that wasn't particularly reassuring. The possibility that there had always been invisible voyeurs shadowing his every move, watching everything he did, was incredibly worrying, especially given the kind of activities he had occasionally participated in the past. Had he been watched every time he spent the night in the arms of a willing girl? Every time he snuck out the motel door and... Best not to worry about things he couldn't change. And best not to think of his past sexual exploits when both of his parents were in the room. She was watching him even as she studied the other men in the room. The one that had been her husband, and the one that had formed from the baby she had rocked to sleep long ago. She was undisturbed by the growl and shouting, though she frowned whenever the language became more colorful. "Your dad would always say sorry if he swore in front of me. He did far too much of it when he first came home." Her smile faded a little. "I guess he's a soldier again now, though, isn't he? And he raised you and Sam to be soldiers, too." She moved around the room easily, less concerned now that Missouri would sense her. She knew that she would be able to think more clearly when she was around, but he knew that she was anxious to leave, anxious to get back to the house that had once been their home, the house where another mother now lived with her children. If he concentrated, he could hear the others now, though he tuned them in and out like the stations on an old radio, the signal occasionally getting concealed by static, sometimes getting one station overlapping another when their frequencies were too similar. There was the girl crying to be heard because she had not been for so very long, the elderly man that was enjoying his newfound lack of pain, the child who saw this newfound reality as a terrifying but inciting adventure, the lover who was taking a break from the supernatural stalking of his one-time beloved. There were many, all of them resisting the release that came with that accumulated time, all of them resisting the very idea of their lives being over. They knew they were dead, knew that that chapter was over. They just weren't willing to accept that the book was too. Refusing to accept the final the end, and were, instead, busily transcribing their own postscripts. For the most part, they didn't actually want to talk to him. They just wanted to be acknowledged, and in him they found a way to escape the bounds of their existence, no longer condemned to haunt a specific place or individual. Now they could come to him, gather with others, and through something that not even his mother understood, commune with each other. Spirits from different eras who had met their ends in different ways were able to meet up with others while in his presence and actually socialize. He decided that there was something not quite right about that. The dead were meant to get peace by moving on, by letting go of the things that kept them anchored to the world of the living. He didn't want to be the social coordinator for the afterlife. What kind of freaking job description was that?
Dean? She smiled. Come on, sweetheart, I have to go. If you don't start talking to your daddy soon, you're going to have to do it without me.
Okay. Dean focused on his brother, found, surprisingly, that he'd forgotten that both of his hands were still being held. Even with the arguing, they still hadn't broken the circle. Missouri frowned at him, picking up on something no doubt but not being able to tune in like Dean could. She was still only listening to Marlowe. He was still there, whispering to her because Dean had never heard him, had never tuned him in, hadn't wanted to, hadn't, until today, even realized that he could.
He didn't mean to hurt me.
Who, Marlowe?
Dean nodded.
Thought we were taking his son away.
His son?
The "his" was almost a snarl.
He thought we were taking his son away? What about mine? John!
Missouri snapped, speaking harshly. She exchanged a brief look with Dean. There was no way she was going to let Dean think that John no longer thought of him as a son. Not when that wasn't true. There wasn't room for that kind of misunderstanding. Missouri pulled at John's hand until he turned to her, away from Dean.
What?
You don't use that tone with me, John Winchester. Not in my home. She let the anger leach out of her voice before she continued, allowing Jefferson Marlowe to say everything he wanted to. Dean, while Dean was looking at someone else, behind her, she had her suspicions, but voicing them would serve no purpose. Jefferson Marlowe did not kill his boy. Though his son's disappearance led him quickly to his own grave, it was only then, after he died, that he discovered his boy had never left, that he'd been stolen away, killed by his own wife. When you went into the house, he tried to scare you away. It had worked with others, but he didn't know hunters. He thought you were taking his boy away. After he'd realized what he'd done, it was too late. He could no longer help his boy. He'd move on even before death had cooled his body. But he could help yours, John. Try to make amends. That's all he cares about now. Keeping Dean safe. Paying his debt. Dean could see, even from the profile of his father's face, that the anger hadn't dissipated. An angry John Winchester was a dangerous John Winchester. A very big part of Dean was suddenly glad that he didn't remember everything from his past. Instinctively, he knew. He just knew that some things were best left forgotten. Dean? He looked to her, voice as sweet as anything he had ever heard, and before yesterday, he hadn't heard it for 22 years. Dean, I have to go, sweetheart. I told you, honey, I can't stay.
You can. You could stay with me. You don't have to go back to that house.
I do, baby. You, your daddy, and your brother do your bit to make the world a better, a safer place. I've been taking a leaf out of your book, doing some. She smiled as she tried the next word out for size. Hunting of my own.
Going after the bad guys?
Well, at the moment, just one. She smiled, and Dean was sure that every shadow shrank back into the gloom in its radiance. Tell your daddy, Dean. Tell him what I told you. The smile slipped away, and she gave him a look that he thought only ever belonged on his father's face when he was a kid, one that meant that she was not prepared to be disobeyed. I'm serious, Dean. Tell him. He looked to his father, and then to his brother, and released both of their hands.
Dean?
He got up slowly and moved to the light switch, filling the room with a light that could never rival the one that his mother cast. He looked to his mother, needed her reassurance before he spoke.
Follows me.
What does?
Dean shook his head. He didn't know what it was called, just knew it what it was, how it felt as it got closer.
What does it want?
Me gone.
Well, that's not going to happen.
John's angry retort was joined by a quieter query from Missouri. Do you know why?
They'd come to me.
He sat down. Talking had never been so exhausting.
Don't move on. Cluttering up the place.
John looked intently at his son.
So this, whatever it is, wants you gone because you can what? Talk to the dead?
Listen more than talk.
Sam chose that moment to join in with the conversation.
Is this something that happened since your accident, or something that's more recent?
He ran his hand through his hair. Now he had to say what he didn't want to admit. This wasn't a recent thing.
Not at all. Before.
Before?
John frowned.
What do you mean, before? Before the accident?
He nodded, lowering his eyes, not wanting to see the anger and hate that may be aimed in his direction. They had been fleeting images, shadows that had passed unnoticed in the darkest night. Shadows do, after all, require some light to be seen. He trained himself to not see them, after Dad had started talking about things that weren't natural or normal being evil. Hadn't wanted his dad to think he was evil. It was a logic that had made sense when he had been 6 years old. As a child, he trained himself unconsciously not to see them. As an adult, he'd not remembered that he'd ever been able to. Not until he started seeing again. There had been the feelings of someone looking over his shoulder, the feelings of being observed. Paranoia Sam had called it the one time he'd mentioned it. That didn't explain how sometimes he'd known there was something there before his EMF meter had signaled a presence, but he happily dismissed it as coincidence. Stranger things, after all, do happen. Seeing them again, letting them know that he could, had only just started happening, right after old Mr. Lanyon had died. He'd been a lovely old man, had spoken to him every day at Fieldcrest, even when Dean wasn't talking back. They'd watched TV together. Mr. Lanyon had liked the soaps, and he'd shouted the questions at the screen during Jeopardy. The old man hadn't realized he was dead when he came to say hello that last day, and Dean hadn't wanted to upset him. Dean had to tell him eventually, after he freaked when Kathleen had walked through him. He'd taken it quite well. He told them he wasn't surprised. Not really. Had been kind of expecting it, and then he'd smile. They'd carried on watching Jeopardy and Days of Our Lives together for the next 2 weeks, and then he'd said goodbye. Things were getting a little too crowded for his liking. That was when Dean had realized that there were other people around who shouldn't be. That was when the shadows showed that they held so much more. That was when he remembered that it wasn't something new. He'd missed Mr. Lanyon, but that hadn't meant that he'd wanted to talk to any of the others. Mr. Lanyon had been his friend before he died. He'd ignored the others, even the miserable old bastard from down the corridor who went on the prowl every night being as rude and abrasive in death as he had been in life. Missouri handed out the coffee, even though she knew both the men sitting in front of her probably wanted something a lot stronger. Dean had been in bed for over an hour, and the mood in the house hadn't improved any since then. John couldn't get over the fact that his son had kept this ability a secret from him. He was seething, but he didn't know where to direct his anger. Dean would be the easy target, but it would be unfair. He could recognize that. There were reasons why a child would lie about things that may get him into trouble, either real or imagined, especially when he believed that it would make his one remaining parent treat him differently. To the child Dean had been, John knew what scared Dean, the possibility that his father would not trust him with his little brother anymore, even the chance that the same father wouldn't love him anymore. And it hurt,
because it meant that he'd never managed to convince his son that his love was unconditional, that his son had grown up believing that he might stop loving him, that he might turn his back. It was another way he'd failed as a father. One more thing to add to a very long list, that Mary could kick his butt for if he were ever to see her again. Sam, for his part, had stayed mostly silent. His father had to work out his parenting issues by himself. He was not about to tell his dad that he'd been a fabulous father, not when there were times when he hadn't been. He had to accept, though, that even if he hadn't been wonderful, he'd always done what he thought best. Sam would once have surprised himself that he could think that way. He hadn't always. In fact, until he was 18, his father was the man he disliked the most of all the men he had known while growing up. He had told himself that he just hadn't understood the man. But if he was being honest with himself, he could see now that it was because he had recognized in his father a few of the things he had never liked in himself. "Get over it, John," Missouri chided. "You can't change the past." John sipped the coffee and nodded. It was true, but he could still try to think of a way to make up for it. "Any ideas on what you think it might be? 'Cause I'm at a loss here." Missouri shook her head. "Not my specialty, John. I'm not up on the old research. There are people you know that'll know more than I do." "I guess I could call around. Jim may know something. So might Bobby. There's always Caleb and Joshua, too. Not to mention the guys out at Bill's." John looked at his watch. It was fast approaching midnight. Though the world of hunters did not keep strict schedules, it was not sensible to call a hunter at this particular time. They could, after all, be in the middle of a hunt. Hell, that could be true at any times of the day, but he tried to make a point of not calling anyone between midnight and 2 if he could avoid it. Memories of spooking that black dog when he hadn't turned his phone off came flooding back. Still had the scars to prove that that had been a grave error. He hadn't had the heart to blast Sammy over that one, though. Dean had been in the hospital with a concussion, and Sam had just wanted to let him know. He never forgot to turn his phone off after that, but it was possible other hunters could make the same oversight. He swallowed the rest of the coffee and stood up, taking the empty cup over to the sink and rising it under the tap. "I'm going to hit the sack. I'll have an early start in the morning." He didn't say goodnight, just walked up the stairs to the room he was sharing with Dean. His son didn't stir as he entered, and John carefully closed the door behind him. The Innocent, Chapter 14. John had only been gone from the room for about 20 minutes, while he fought a determined battle with Missouri's ancient shower, but it felt decidedly different when he returned. The wind had picked up, and he found himself frowning at the open window. It was hot. The fresh air was welcome, but an open window was an invitation. Even with the charms and sigils spread liberally around the house, he wasn't prepared to take the chance. The drapes danced at the window, but he was happy to see that all the salt line on the sill was still intact as he closed the opening to the outside world. He moved towards a thin mattress that sat on top of the rickety metal frame and lowered himself wearily onto it. It had been a long day, and, as he looked across at his son, he realized that it may not be over yet. There was just enough light coming in from the streetlight from outside for him to be able to make out Dean on the bed. Even though he could see light reflected in his son's eyes, his boy didn't speak, didn't acknowledge that his dad was there.
"You should be asleep, Dean."
It sounded harsher than he intended. The eyes closed briefly before opening to once again stare at the empty space just below the ceiling. He didn't want to have this conversation, didn't want Dean to think that he was angry, but the words were escaping before he could rein them in.
"You could have told me, you know. You should have."
Again, no reply from Dean, but he saw the boy's lower lip disappear between his teeth, a habit that he hadn't ever grown out of, and that broadcast the fact that he was thinking, that he was worried.
I would never have blamed you, or been angry at you. A gift like the one you have, it's like Missouri's. The gift isn't evil, Dean. It only becomes evil if you use it the wrong way.
John stood up and moved towards his unresponsive child, sitting carefully on the edge of the bed.
Talk to me, Dean.
John saw his son's eyes move, a quick glance in his direction, and then back towards the ceiling. John rested his hand on Dean's shoulder. He didn't say anything. He'd take only what Dean wanted to give. No pressure.
Did you hate me?
Dean sounded all of about 10 years old, and he exhaled a breath he didn't know he was holding.
Never, Dean. You know that, don't you?
His question was greeted with silence, and he sighed. Deserting his boy for the better part of 4 years wasn't exactly going to win him any Father of the Year prizes, was it? He hadn't been a wonderful father even without that hanging over him, but both his boys had to know that he loved them. They had to. Yet they'd both felt the need to keep secrets. Sam's was college, and Dean's. Dean had been hiding his whole life.
I'm never going to hate you, son. Never. Sometimes I make mistakes. It happens. I'm human, despite rumors to the contrary.
The injected humor didn't materialize into anything other than a half-hearted chuckle on his part.
I don't mean for either you or Sammy to get hurt, but I know it happens. Your mother always knew when I was sorry, Dean. I never had to say the word. It's not an excuse, it's just that I never learned how. Not really. It's easier to apologize when you've dropped a plate or bumped into someone. But when it's the emotional stuff, when it's something that really matters, I don't do that. Hurting you, it was never intentional.
Lying there, John, he chastised himself. You knew exactly what you were doing when you left him at Fieldcrest, and don't you dare deny it.
I never meant to hurt you. I just didn't know what else to do.
Dean's eyes flickered towards him, but he didn't make a sound.
Shit. Looks like it's a night for confessions. Do you think that me sending you to Fairview was because I didn't care?
John decided not to wait for an answer.
I couldn't keep you safe, son. I couldn't keep you safe. Sam and me, we may not have visited as often as we should, but please don't think we were trying to forget you.
He fought the urge to touch his son and smiled.
I mean, how the hell could you ever be forgotten?
John adjusted his body on the bed, made himself more comfortable as he carried on talking, hoping that Dean really was listening and that he'd never have to think about one of the worst periods of his life ever again. He maneuvered himself so that his back was against the headboard. Dean moved slightly, further away, making room for him. Balancing precariously on the end of the bed, John took Dean's movement as an invitation to continue.
I don't know how much you remember about the early days after your accident. I should have spoken to you about this before, but it hurt, Dean. It really did. Right at the beginning, you didn't know me or your brother. You didn't talk at all, and the doctors, they said that you probably never walked. You showed them, though, eh? Always knew you were stubborn, a fighter. But even with the progress you were making, it was slow. So slow. You've been able to protect yourself since you were 10 years old. Worked like hell to make sure your brother was safe too, but after. We've made enough enemies, Dean. There were enough things out there that would have taken advantage of you being helpless. You can't deny that, son. You were.
Dean's eyes were still open, blinking occasionally, but other than that, he didn't acknowledge him.
Fairview was a perfect town, you know? Except for the high school gym teacher disappearing with the vice principal.
The sigh almost filled the room.
Guilt.
John felt the need to hold his boy, to hold him like he'd not done in so long, but he didn't. He didn't know whether it would be welcome.
Guilt kept us away.
both of us. Though Sam's never really told me about what runs through his head, I could tell. He bites his lip, fighting to hold back tears that were attempting to escape, that had been threatening to do so for days.
I should have been able to protect you. I got you into that situation. Damn it, boy, I got you into this life. I'm responsible, and every time I saw you, every time, I felt like I was failing you even more. And Sammy, he never got over the fact that you got hurt saving him. Saving him like I never managed to save you.
Dean was looking at him then, a small frown furrowing his brow. John didn't notice that the tears had managed to slip past his defenses, but his son had. The birds woke him up the next morning, birds and the fact that his back was sending signals to his brain that it didn't like the camp bed he'd moved to in the early hours. He'd fallen asleep on Dean's bed, and John had woken to find that Dean had been right there, curled up next to him, just like when he'd been little. A fleeting memory of his baby boy, falling asleep as soon as he held him next to his chest, brought a bittersweet smile to his face. He'd moved carefully, determined not to wake his son, and he'd settled back into the metallic contraption carefully, grateful that his son hadn't even stirred. He looked across at his sleeping boy now, relieved that he could sleep. Years on the road meant that Dean had become a light sleeper, his senses always on alert, always ready to cope with the adrenaline rush that accompanied consciousness whenever he was woken up suddenly, unless, of course, it was either he or Sammy that had done the waking. He seemed to be able to sense if it was family waking him up before he'd risen from the depths of sleep, and on those days it could take minutes, and a less-than-healthy dose of strong coffee, enough to stand the spoon up in, to get him to come to his senses. Dean had learned to take sleep when he could, grabbing a few hours whenever he could slip them in, but when the hunt was finished, his body called in the debt it was owed and made him repay it with interest. Now there was no debt. Now there was just a good, healthy 8 hours of sleep a night, more than Dean had ever been able to get on a regular basis since he was a child. He didn't need to be silenced leaving the room, but he was. Missouri was already up and about when John reached the kitchen, coffee already brewing. John blessed the woman silently and poured himself a cup. He couldn't tell where she was, but as her car was still on the drive, she couldn't be far. He picked up his phone and began calling every hunter he was still on speaking terms with, and a few he wasn't. One name was mentioned more than once, someone who may be able to help, someone that was considered a crazy by many, but respected nevertheless. He had a name. The question, though, was where to find this oracle of knowledge. In the end, both Jim and Bobby suggested the same thing. Harvell's. It had been a while since he'd seen Bill Harvell, but he'd only ever been to the roadhouse once, and he'd never usually considered taking his boys there. Hunters could be untrustworthy and dangerous, not people you wanted your kids to hang around with. But he couldn't deny the value of both men's suggestions. Hunters came and went at Harvell's all the time. It was a network of people who, between them, had amassed so much knowledge of the supernatural world, he couldn't really think about dismissing the place as a chance for his boy. Maybe they didn't need to know about Dean's gift, though. Nah, maybe that wouldn't be so good. Some hunters saw things in black and white, no shades of gray. Men like that could be more than just a little dangerous if they considered that the supernatural world had an influence on Dean. Missouri knew they were leaving even before John had finished his first cup of coffee. She'd insisted, though, that there was no way those boys were leaving her home until they had a decent breakfast. No way at all. And John was not going to argue with her. She closed the door and sighed. She knew they had to go. Knew she couldn't keep them, but still, she felt that there was something unfinished, something she could have done to help. Dean, he'd hardly spoken two words all morning. Instead, he'd watched his father and brother as they ate, waiting for one of them to begin a conversation that didn't happen.
Dean hadn't mentioned his mother being amongst the visitors last night. She couldn't blame him, really. John would have been sidetracked, would have wanted to have spoken to her. She rubbed her hand over her face, glancing at the clock on the wall. She had an appointment in a little over 10 minutes. She had just about enough time to get ready for it. The Innocent, Chapter 15. It shouldn't have taken more than 4 or 5 hours to get to Harvell's from Missouri's front door, but John couldn't shake the fear and worry that fatigue would prompt a seizure in his eldest. He didn't want to put his son, or himself, through another one of those if it could be avoided. That was why, instead of eating in the car, driving straight through, they stopped 3 times en route, and the journey had taken close to double what it should have, John and Sam switching off after every stop. Dragging the car across the track to the roadhouse, John was hoping Bill and Ellen would be able to spare them some beds for the night. He didn't really relish the idea of driving the 40 miles to the nearest motel, not when he'd have to come back here to see whether the guy Bobby told him about showed up tonight. He looked at Dean's face in the mirror, screwed up in thought. He should ask him if he was okay, but he realized years ago that that word meant nothing when applied to his eldest son. Dean always said yes. He always was. He was always, and always would be, okay if asked, even though, as far as John was concerned, Dean had had the ability to be okay taken away. "Dean, there's some people I'd like to introduce to you. They're friends." His son nodded, but remained silent as he watched the roadhouse grow nearer through the Impala's dusty glass. Before he allowed his boys in there, and he included Sam in that despite the fact that Sam could look after himself, he had to find out who was inside. Some members of the hunting fraternity were seriously lacking in understanding, and he wasn't prepared to have one, either, of his boys upset. Dean watched his dad walk up to the worn wooden door and waited. He hadn't been asked to follow. It didn't occur to him to open the door and get out. Not before Dad told him to.
You been here before?
Sam didn't turn away from the door his father had disappeared through. Just quietly answered his brother's question.
No.
Dean didn't miss the restrained anger in his brother's voice, and he allowed Sam to wallow in whatever frustration was fueling this current bout of moodiness. Probably had something to do with Dad making them stay in the car. Maybe being treated like children should have annoyed him, made him angry too. The old him probably would have hated this treatment. But Dean was actually kind of grateful for the chance to think. Ever since the roadhouse had been visible, Dean had started hearing less and less from his entourage, the voices becoming more distant, more reluctant to follow. Quite simply, the dead knew that they were not welcome here at the roadhouse, and were keeping their distance. Without Dean's presence to hold them together, all but the strongest seemed to be retreating, back into the ether, back where they belonged. His constant companion was there, though, lurking, and Dean took unexpected pleasure from that. The idea that the spirit of Jefferson Marlowe would linger even while instinct, if the dead possessed such a thing, attempted to persuade it to hold back.
Sam?
Yeah? A huff, exasperated, impatient.
Is this place protected?
Sam turned to him then, directed his attention toward his brother with concern, dismissing the anger that he'd been throwing towards the door their father had disappeared through.
What's wrong? No ghosts.
Sam smiled. It was unexpected. He didn't smile very often. There are so many hunters in and out. There are probably wards, sigils, spells, you name it, protecting this place. Dean relaxed back into the seat. The dead had a reason to be wary. With any luck, they wouldn't be waiting for him when he left. Sam stood at the bar watching the people. The other hunters, huddled in their own private corners. Every now and again, a pair of curious or suspicious eyes would be thrown his way, but for the most part, he was ignored. The blonde girl behind the bar placed a couple of bottles in front of him and smiled, her chin jerking towards the corner where his dad was sitting with Dean.
That your brother?
Not even bothering to lower the bottle from his mouth, he nodded. Sam wasn't sure how he felt about this girl sniffing around. It was great that she was interested, but Dean probably wasn't what she was expecting. Not what she would want if she spent the time talking to him. Not anymore. He turned on his heel and rejoined his family. He didn't want to get caught up in a conversation about his brother. Not when he felt so damn protective, and when he was certain that somehow she'd find some way to hurt him. And wasn't that a kick in the teeth? Dean would have not been impressed by the suggestion that he needed his feelings protected.
They got a couple of rooms out back. One of them's usually occupied by a guy named Ash, but he's away right now. Means they can put us up for a couple of nights if we want to stay.
John took the second beer that Sam had placed on the table and swallowed a mouthful before he turned to his eldest son.
You sure you don't want water or something?
Dean shook his head, content, for the moment, to sit and listen. He watched the other hunters as they cleaned weapons or discussed hunts in hushed tones. There was one at the far end of the bar who didn't hide the fact that he was interested in their presence. Dark eyes caught Dean's occasionally, lifting up the knife he was playing with, still participating in the conversation he was having with the others at his table. He was doing more than casually observing. He was weighing something up, judging, appraising. He looked dangerous, and Dean wasn't sure what to make of him.
Not drinking?
Dean looked up to see the girl who'd been stood behind the bar, smiling down at him. Before Dean could think to answer, Sam spoke up.
No, he doesn't.
Teetotal, eh? Don't see many of those around here.
Before Dean could reply, she smiled, picked up the empty bottle in front of Sam, and returned to the bar.
Hey, Joe.
Dean watched as an older woman joined the girl behind the bar, the blonde smile slipping at the tone from the new arrival.
What?
Your dad wants you all back, and you can cut the attitude. You know full well that's not going to work with either one of us. The girl, Joe, suddenly stomped her way out towards the back of the saloon. Dean almost missed the arrival of the brooding hunter at the bar, depositing empty glasses in front of him.
Same again?
Dean could almost feel the eyes boring into him as the hunter smiled, a cold, hard grin.
Nah, I think I'm out of here.
Okay. The woman cleared the bar, her tone lowered, trying to keep the conversation civil.
Do me a favor, Walker. Don't offer any hunts you think are beneath you to my daughter. She's not a hunter.
She seems to think she is.
Well, she's not.
Even from where Dean was sitting, he could tell it was a dismissal. The hunter said no more. He simply smiled, turned away, and walked out. Dean was certain that more than one look came his way before the door closed.
Jackass.
Startled, Dean hadn't realized that the woman from behind the bar had joined them. His dad chuckled.
Wasn't that Gordon Walker?
Yeah. Self-styled vampire hunter and arrogant bastard.
Boys, allow me to introduce Ellen Harvell. Ellen, these are my boys, Sam and Dean.
Ellen wiped her hands on the cloth in her hand and then threw it across her shoulder before offering her hand to Sam. She didn't offer to shake Dean's hand, merely nodded her head and smiled.
Pleased to meet you both.
She directed her attention to John. Bill just talked to Wilder. Seems to think Jameson's out on the West Coast, but he always calls in every couple of weeks or so, so he could be around any time. Just don't think tonight's going to be your lucky night. John drew in a deep breath, a request hanging in the air, but Ellen stepped in before he had a chance to voice it.
You boys are welcome to stay here for a couple of days if you want.
If John had known what was coming, he wouldn't have been so grateful.